Steve, thanks. Hi, everybody. I'm Bill Leff. That's Wendy Snyder.
Good morning.
Together, we're Bill and Wendy. We have a show WGN has given us, two of them, actually. One now, one later on in the day. If you want to be a part of it, 312-981-7200 should get that done.
Girls rule.
Yes. Are you saying this for a reason? Is it because of Hillary Clinton?
Yes, it
is. Is that why? Yes, I agree with you.
It's pretty exciting.
It should be, you know, because of all the circus that's gone on with Donald Trump, it should be a much bigger deal that a woman has finally secured the nomination for a major party, but it's kind of lost in the shuffle to some extent, isn't it?
And it's lost, in my opinion, because it's a Clinton. Bush, Clinton, Bush, Clinton, Bush, Clinton, Trump. You know, which one does not belong?
I hadn't really thought about that, but I guess there probably is maybe something to that, I guess.
She's got pretty high negatives, and so I think that's part of it, too.
Yeah, I bet it is.
You know, Barack Obama, when he became the first African-American, was sort of an untested guy.
Yeah.
Or unknown a little bit, so I think there was much more positive there.
But that
and
was...
hope. You know what I mean?
Yeah, without a doubt. That was such a huge deal that... an African-American candidate had finally happened. But for some reason, I thought there'd be a lot more fanfare for the fact that it's a woman, and it's there kind of, but it's way in the background.
Well, and the other thing is that, you know, we've known this was going to happen for 6 months.
Yeah.
It was just a matter of when.
Yeah.
I thought she gave a very nice speech last night, and I don't know if you guys were watching it. Were you?
I saw snippets of it. I didn't see the whole
snippets.
Thing.
Didn't watch it.
Okay, well, let me recite for you what
okay,
I like.
Okay, do my whole thing.
In her voice, please.
I am woman.
Yes.
No,
this was Helen Reddy's speech that she read?
It was. It was kind of dated. But no, it's a very nice speech, but it was key, too, that she, you know, she's, I think you guys have brought up her tone sometimes.
Yes,
you know,
I have.
People who don't, you got to let the microphone do the work for you. And she really did that last night. And it contrasted nicely because earlier you had Donald Trump, who tried to do it as well. You know, Trump tends to be a little more assertive and, mm-hmm. When she tries to do that, it doesn't always work for her, just in her tone.
It sounds scolding a lot of times.
Right.
And
so,
I hate to say that.
So, you know, and right, and it shouldn't be that important, but it was clear that they took a different tack last night, and it was a lovely evening for her.
So now what happens is, if what I read is true in the paper, Barack Obama meets with Bernie Sanders in a couple of days.
To try and talk him into finally suspending his campaign.
Tomorrow, yeah. I don't
gonna
know
keep going.
I just ran a piece in the news. I know you guys were transitioning, but this reporter, Brad Melke from ABC, did a great job of tying in Godfather quotes to the Bernie Sanders situation.
Oh.
Like, you know, Obama's going to try to make him an offer he can't refuse, and it's just business.
What do you think that I was trying to imagine what exactly that offer will be. Any ideas, Steve? What do you think he'll offer?
Well, I think they'll, you know, he's in line to be the Budget Committee chairman if the Senate goes back to the Democrats. And a unified Democratic Party goes a long way towards seeing that happening.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. I think that they can give, you know, a commitment, a verbal commitment to some of his issues and things like that. It's kind of a hard thing to, you know, you can't promise him a castle in South Florida or something.
Any chance Hillary's going to pick him as a running mate?
No, I can't imagine.
Really?
No, I wouldn't think so. I mean, you know.
Wouldn't that be a great idea on her part? Because the people who don't like her, I'm scared, are going to vote for Trump just because it's an anti-Hillary vote.
Right.
So all the Bernie supporters, wouldn't that be a great political move to say, you know what, you fought a great race, why don't you be my running mate?
Well, they thought the same thing with Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton. They thought when they ran up against each other that this would unify the party and it would be better for everybody if that was the case, and it wasn't. And I think if you go back in history, or recent history anyway, there's always that speculation of one of the other front runners when
you
they
know,
don't win. Yeah.
The longer I've been around, I realize it's just the same play. We just keep rewatching it.
Yeah.
Except
on
this
so
year is
many
so
things.
Completely different that who knows what might happen.
Well, it is. But, you know, we've talked about the Olympics. And when we get to this stage in a contested primary, we were here 8 years ago.
Yeah.
And everyone was saying the same thing. Oh, what's Hillary going to do? Are they going to make up? Is she going to work for him?
Oh,
what's,
yeah, you're
what's
right.
What's Bernie going to do?
She
are they going to make up?
Secretary of State, which is a pretty plum role.
Right. And she did make up, and she worked for him and got him elected.
Yeah, but he didn't want to share the minority spotlight. He's the first African-American president. He doesn't want to have a female.
They weren't going to run together. No, they weren't. I don't think they ever were, Wendy. It just, you know, in this case, there've been Bernie Sanders has said a lot of very damaging things about Hillary Clinton and how she's raised money and things like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's hard to then share the spotlight. He's a little unpredictable. I think Hillary wants very predictable.
But she's, running
he's
against...
He's not as attractive as a, you know, he's very attractive to the younger people and those who supported him. I don't know if he reaches across to those who didn't.
But here's the thing. The people, the younger voters who supported Bernie Sanders are going to vote for Trump just to spite
so?
Hillary. I feel, I just think to win, to beat the demon, you got to have a new strategy.
Well, it's really weird because if you look at this from a distance, you say to yourself, the younger voters would more than likely go to Donald Trump just by virtue of the fact that he was a reality television star.
Right.
And maybe they'd be blinded by that, but they don't seem to be, which is, I'm proud of them for that. But it
because
just,
they're holding their hopes on Bernie Sanders.
Yeah.
But now if he's out of it, it just, this whole thing really scares me.
Well, if he's out of it, I would, you know, Bernie should help to focus them on the issues he's talked about and which candidate more likely represents those issues.
Right.
That's what Hillary Clinton needs from him.
My daughters are of voting age, and Steve, your kids are of voting age.
Yep.
With Bernie Sanders out of the race, I know for a fact that neither of my daughters would give their vote to Donald Trump because we've talked about that a bunch.
They might not be very enthusiastic about going to vote, right? Would you say that?
You know what? They still are, but I think a lot of that falls on the fact that this is their first election, that they're old enough to vote. So I think a lot
What an election to start with.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're going to be bored the rest of their voting lives.
Absolutely.
I've told them that this is not the norm, and they kind of know that. But I've said, believe me when I tell you, it doesn't always play out this way. And their fear, and this is a valid fear, is this the way elections are going to be from now on? And I hope not. There's no guarantee of that. Is there? I can't imagine there being a guarantee of that. Is this the new normal
Kanye's
when it comes
running
to...
Kanye's running next term. You know that. He said that.
Yeah.
And to be fair, 815 says Hillary is the true demon, as you say. And yeah, there are people who feel both ways.
Well, to be fair, what do you mean to be fair?
Because I said to beat the demon of Donald Trump, you
got
to do something different.
Right. Now, she's been referred to several times, Steve, not just in the last 24 hours, but over the course of this as the first... female candidate, now it's legit or presumptive, to head a major party. I think, is it Shirley Chisholm? Is that the one who was?
She ran in the Democratic primaries, and she won, actually, in New Jersey in 1972.
But wasn't her name, I'm trying to remember, because we were all very young at the time, grade school.
I had her trading card. Remember they had presidential trading cards?
That.
Did?
Yeah, I love those.
Was she on the ballot as an independent at some point, or was she just was her name not even on the ballot by the time it came to the election?
General election? I don't know the answer to that. I know she ran in the Democratic primaries, so I could try to find that. But
I'll look for it, too. I just couldn't remember, because they do keep saying she's the first major party candidate, which implies...
Well, there might have been Green Party candidates or things like that.
Yeah. All right.
They're not lying.
All right. No, people don't lie.
She might be, as people say. 312-981-7200. Quick break. Back with your calls. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN. All right. Hillary Clinton, the first female head of a party. Is that what the history-making thing is?
I don't know if head of the party is correct terminology, but the candidate, the presumptive candidate, certainly.
That's a fun word that we don't use enough.
I'm going to say it a lot more often now. Presumptive.
This is the presumptively good Bill and Wendy show.
Yeah, presumptive.
All right, we were talking about who Hillary's going to pick and what's going on in this crazy election field. Charlie, you have some thoughts?
Yeah, the primary, I'm an election judge in Will County. The primary, we had a 50 to 60% turnout, a lot of young people. The election last November was local, mayor, alderman, stuff like that, a 20% turnout. Okay, 20% of that, I would say 10 or less were under the age of 30. So my question is, if Bernie doesn't run, are they going to even bother coming out to vote? Or something else going to be going on that day and I can't make it?
That is a great question, and a lot of times people feel, it turns into a your team versus my team, and if your candidate isn't in the running, you got to vote, but I can see where people would say, oh, then I'm not even going out. Lesser of two evils, I'm not going to cast my vote for either of them. That's scary to me.
No, I agree with you because so many people I've talked to, they're both evil. You know, I mean, this is their personal opinion. They're both evil. And, you know, I don't want to vote for, you know, the Trumper or Hillary.
But, Charlie, didn't you feel when you were younger, and I won't throw you into the blanket of being as jaded as the rest of us, but before you realized that the political process is a sham, when you were younger, wasn't there more impetus to vote? Didn't you say to yourself, yeah, it means a lot to me. I'll go in there and cast my vote for the most important office in the world. Didn't you feel that when you were younger?
You know what? To be quite honest with you, when voting was low to the age of 18, man, I was like, oh, my God, I get to vote for the first time. I mean, I was up at 6 o'clock to get in there to vote for the first time.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, man, I get to vote.
Yeah,
it was pretty exciting.
Oh, yeah, it really was. And, I mean, not that I'm bragging or something, but I've been an election judge since I was 22 simply for the fact I feel that I'm trying to help out the system.
Sure.
You know, get everybody else out to vote. You know, these people can vote by mail. Will Coney's talking about going to internet, you know, being able to vote online, but they can vote by mail. They send in a card requesting a ballot, and boom, they get the ballot.
But
and somebody's going to hack the account and then, you know, votes.
They can't do that for the presidency. That's still not an option at this point,
right,
to vote online.
No, they're just talking about it. They're just talking about it. I doubt it's going to happen. But I'm saying you can vote by mail. You can request a ballot. They send you a ballot out. You fill it out, put it in the self-addressed stamped envelope, and send it back.
Couldn't be easier, right?
Exactly.
Thanks for helping out with the elections. We appreciate it, Charlie.
I love it.
Thanks, Charlie.
Thank you, guys.
Have a great week.
And thanks for that insight, too. No Bernie, no vote, some people think. 574 has texted, this is my two sons' first legal election to vote in. They're both Team Bernie. They said if Hillary wins the nominee, they will reluctantly vote Trump.
Interesting. I'm sure, you know, the options are fairly limited. You vote Hillary Clinton, you vote Donald Trump, or you vote for one of the independents. You only have a couple options, or somebody will vote for Mickey Mouse or Batman. That always happens too. That might be a waste of a vote. You decide. But
if somebody wastes their vote,
yeah,
and somebody said people who hate both choices should look at the libertarians. Fat chance in hell they're going to win. But you don't know. Again, this election year is crazy.
Yeah.
But if you throw away your chance to vote or vote libertarian, who's going to benefit from that, in your opinion, Trump or Hillary?
People who do that always say what they're doing there is just sending a message. But I think it's a message that just falls on deaf ears, don't you?
Does
the Republicans or the Democrats ever look at those numbers afterwards and go, wow, all those people really were mad, but we still have a winner and it's Republican or Democrat?
Yeah, but if you vote libertarian because you don't want Hillary to win or whatever, who's going to benefit from, in my opinion, them throwing away their vote? 708, Wendy, you are clueless when it comes to political acumen. Your insights are curious and superficial. I don't have any interest in politics, and I am completely blown away by this year's election. So I have tons of questions, as do many people.
But it's impossible with all that's gone on, especially in this political cycle, to not care or not. I mean, even if you did everything in your power to shield yourself, and not just you, but anybody from the political climate, it's impossible this time around.
I have questions, because I don't follow this. I have baseball questions and political questions.
No.
262, we are Dems, and we will never vote for Hillary.
Yeah. Yeah.
Kind of an interesting election year.
Without a doubt, there will be a cross-sampling of all that. So how will it shake out?
Michael, what do you think?
Hey, good morning.
Morning.
I've got a couple points to make. First off, the one that I told your producer there, that if Trump wins, that's going to be the biggest slap in the face the American public can give to all politicians.
True.
Basically is saying, here's a non-politician. We want him. We're tired of you, politicians. Secondly, when you talk about who's evil and who's not, just remember that Trump didn't get a bunch of Marines killed in Bosnia. Trump didn't break the law by sending emails through his personal server and then get to edit those emails so that just the right ones were given back over to the government. It's kind of like, I've got to go on trial. I'm a judge. I want to be the judge at my trial. She got to make all those decisions. She never got reprimanded for it properly. She should have had to turn over that server and had somebody else go over it.
Those are all points that have been made. Do you think Trump is? Do you think what he said about the judge, the judge in Indiana, is racist?
I see how that could be meant to be racist. Yeah, okay. And maybe there was a little bit of racism in it, but there's a lot of racism in the United States.
I'm just interested in your view because you clearly don't like Clinton. I wanted to see how you saw that one. So you say, yeah, maybe.
And Michael, you don't. All right. So Hillary has done these things. I'm fearful of what Trump might do in the future. You can't predict the future, but Hillary has a good head on her shoulders. I don't know if Donald Trump does, and I'm curious and wondering what he's going to do in the future for our country.
I think he will be a lot more controlled than what you're seeing in this election. I think he's doing more superficial and more grandiose, bring the attention to me, get the attention off the others.
But what's in it for him to be more controlled, Michael? What would lead you to believe that?
I just don't think that once he actually has the authority, I don't think that he will be as off the cuff. He'll probably still talk off the cuff, but the actions will be very different than what he says. Hopefully they will be good.
What if they're not?
He will turn. Well, we've got that issue right now. There's been a lot of political issues that have gone on with Obama and with Clinton herself that were not good, were not proper, and should not have happened, and they're supposedly the professionals. So with them already saying, you know, we're politicians and we're going to play the game, and here's how around Congress voting on this, and if Congress doesn't let me have this, I'll push it through anyway. I'm kind of tired of seeing that happen in politics. And that's why, unfortunately, we are, I do have to agree, we have the choice of the lesser of two evils. That really is what it comes down to. The libertarian vote will either be beneficial to Hillary or be beneficial to Donald. It'll be one way or the other.
Right. Michael, we have to run and hit news, but sure. Thanks for your opinion, and that's what we should have as a conversation, and we are. So thank you.
Thanks, Michael.
You're welcome. Have a great day.
You too. All right, let's do this. A break, some news. Steve has the news, and then we have a lot more show. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
What is wrong with me when I hear this kind of church music? I get goosebumps and I feel like I should be in church getting married again. Not to a different person, but I just...
Are you sure?
Yes.
Yeah, all right.
Jimmy Mac all over again. But it's just, this is a happy church music.
When I hear this or something like this, it puts me in the mind of, do you ever wake up really early on a Sunday, like at 5:30 for no reason, and you turn on the TV... And you hear, Kevin, can you just play that again? Here's what you would hear. This is 5:30 on a Sunday morning. You're watching Reflections.
Yeah.
A weekly look at religion in and around Chicago. Now here's your host, Pastor Godey.
Godey?
Or the very empathetically named, It's the Mass for Shut-Ins.
Yes.
How about that? I always would watch that and cry.
You feel bad. Just the name alone.
Yes.
Derogatory.
Get a better name for it. Like at-home version of church, not church for shut-ins.
Now the Mass for people who can't possibly leave their apartments and have a very sad life.
Who have no one else to pick them up.
And take them to church. I know. And it was, really, we didn't, if you're just listening now and you're younger than, what, 30, you're
probably
like, what
30
are you
or 35
talking about?
Cut off. Right.
There wasn't, DVR. There wasn't a billion channels.
Right.
It was like you had 10 channels tops if you had a UHF antenna.
Right. And now the Mass for people who have no interaction with anyone around them.
Oh, it was heartbreaking. It really was.
I know.
And I'd watch it for a while because I'm like, I should really go to church. I don't know what I was doing up there. Maybe I was just coming home at that time. But it's the terrible Mass for shut-ins.
Awful. Terrible name, terrible hour.
Oh.
This is as close to human interaction.
It's so true. And then, oh my God, when I was little, I used to walk up to the TV and act like I was getting my communion. Because what do the people do?
Wow. Maybe you were a shut-in and you didn't know it.
You were a shut-in.
But how did they get communion?
Well, these are in the days before 3D printers. Because now they could just print up a Eucharist. Everybody's happy.
You are so going to hell in a handbasket.
That's the best way to get there.
And it's going to be my handbasket.
When you get to the gates of hell, there are two lanes. There's the regular lane, and then there's the handbasket lane.
Lucifer, he sneaked in the handbasket.
Right. Handbasket!
Excuse me, I need to check your handbasket and go through the metal detector.
Right. We don't want trouble.
On the shopping show for shut-ins.
I bring this up for a good reason. As it turns out, Wendy, and this is very, very exciting news, there is a miracle going on in the city of Chicago right now. A miracle is happening.
Wait. Mm-hmm. The angels are singing.
That's the music you hear when there's
a
miracle.
Talk to me about this miracle.
Well, there has been a sighting of the Virgin Mary in a tree in the South Deering neighborhood of Chicago.
She's up in a tree,
there's
a figure on a tree?
No, people see her. They see the Virgin Mary.
What?
They look up in a tree, and I guess I can say this. I don't know if everybody read the Bible the way I did, but she had a magnificent tree fort when she was growing up. Did you know that about the Virgin Mary? She and her friends built the most, in the Bible anyway, the best tree fort ever. A large imposing tree behind St. Kevin's Church in the South Deering neighborhood of Chicago is causing a bit of a stir.
Any relation, Kevin, to St. Kevin's?
No?
No, I'm no saint.
St. Kevin, by the way, for those of you who don't know, is the patron saint of Magic the Gathering. Did you know that? Within the last few days,
oh my God,
parishioners of the quaint church have been staring at a white, almost 3D-like image that they say resembles the Virgin Mary.
Did somebody 3D print this?
No, this is up in the tree. More and more members of the congregation, as well as their friends and acquaintances, are showing up now to gaze upon the tree. St. Kevin Church just celebrated its 135th anniversary. By the way, wow. I didn't know there were guys named Kevin 135 years ago, did you?
I didn't know there was a St. Kevin.
St. Kevin. Yep. The patron saint of taking your shirt off for no reason at all.
The patron saint of, oh, these tats?
Right. He's the only saint with
you
ink.
You guys, that does not look like the Virgin Mary.
It's a miracle, Wendy.
It's not in the tree, and after all
it
the rain
miracle.
That's coming down.
It's a miracle.
My God, goodness.
I found you this story, and I'm just here getting roasted right now.
Oh, not really.
Wait, is anybody, what is the address? If somebody's driving by, would you please, now that kind of looks like
Wait,
her.
What happened that changed your mind?
Well, they zoomed in on it, and I think it was enhanced, because then you could see the crown on her head.
Yes.
And
yep.
I don't know.
What do you think? Is it a miracle or not?
I believe in miracles. Do you believe in miracles?
Right. Well, there's one on the north side at Wrigley Field. There might as well be one in the South Deering area. St. Kevin Church. Guess who's all going with me in a handbasket? St. Kevin Church just celebrated, as I said, their 135th anniversary.
Is it a wicker basket?
Yeah, it should be wicker. That's the best kind. With a special mass on June the 3rd, and it was after that mass that several of the parishioners saw the image of the Virgin Mary in a tree. One of the women said that she actually spotted the image about a year ago, but she never said anything, said Maria Taliz of South Deering.
Because people would think I was crazy.
Right, right. Now, can I just, for a second, I need to ask this question. You know, I'm not a religious person, but even if I was the most religious person, this would be my question anyway. If you were the Virgin Mary, why would you show up in a tree?
You would just show up anywhere to show that you need to follow in God's footsteps and be a good person. So she just could take many different journeys to various things. I think
right.
I saw her on the new Ferris wheel at Navy
She's
Pier.
She's not on the Ferris wheel at Navy Pier. She's afraid of heights. The tree is the highest she'll go. She'll go up two stories, and that's it. Talise said that last Friday, that woman, the woman who said that she saw it a year ago, asked another parishioner if she wanted to see the Virgin Mary. You've done that to me, Wendy, after a show sometime. You'll go, what have you got going today? I'll go, nothing. You want to see the Virgin Mary?
Who's going to say no to that?
I would see that. Soon other members of the congregation began gathering at the tree to see what the commotion was all about. What's this commotion? It's a miracle. Talise said that she believes that it's a sign of some sort and that the image does... Well, it is a sign of some sort. And that the... Uh-oh. What was that?
Nothing.
That sounded, That sounded like,
it
like
was
big trouble.
That was God.
Yikes.
Saying, careful, or I'm going to mute you.
She said it's the sign of some sort and that the image does resemble the mother of Jesus. I believe it's her. She does appear in weird places, Talese said, adding that the tree is actually not far from an alley with garbage cans and railroad tracks across from it.
What does that mean?
I don't know why that's pertinent to the story at all. That part's baffling. With all the hate and malice going on in the world, she is here for a reason, said Talese. Tuesday afternoon, several members of the congregation cleaned the area around the tree.
Yeah, they were trimming branches and stuff so you could get a better view.
Yep.
What? What did I say that was inappropriate?
It's just, if somebody said to me, hey, you know, we got the Virgin Mary in a tree and we decided we need you to clean the area, I would go, oh, wow, all right, I guess.
It's a church. They have landscapers.
All right.
I just edited myself because I didn't want to go to hell.
If you knew what I just edited,
all right, good.
I would be on the fast track. I'd be there by noon. By the start of Steve's Wintrust business hour, I'd be sitting in the front row. Talese said that some parishioners are encouraging friends to bring flowers to the area in the coming days. Would you do that?
I think that would be a nice little gesture. Plus, it would, you know, make it stand out more so people could walk by and go, what's this? And then you look up. You know, I believe that these little coincidences are not, in fact, a coincidence, but a little sign of God to say, hey, be good to one another.
4 or 5 years ago, there was a similar sighting at an underpass.
Yeah, it was in the Hubbard's Tunnel, Hubbard Cave.
And I think they estimated that over a 2 or 3 week span, they had 25 or 30,000 people come to see it. And again, I don't understand it. If you're a religious deity, why would you show up at an underpass or up in a tree?
To keep people on their toes, because you wouldn't expect to see her there.
I guess that's true. I would not. I would not.
And, you know, if you're going to appear like, I'd like to see it on the Trump Tower in between the N and the P or something.
That'd be excellent.
But I think she might be a Hillary fan.
It's possible.
I'm not sure.
Right. The timing is right. All right.
You're right.
We need to take a quick break. More show coming, Bill and Wendy, WGN. All right. What is your final decision on this tree? For those of you just joining us, there's a tree over at St. Kevin's Church, which is celebrating their 135th anniversary. Congrats, St. Kevin. It's in the South Deering neighborhood. A lot of people think that they see, when they look up in this tree, that they see the Virgin Mary. And what it is really is, it's part of the bark of the tree.
It's a knot. It looks like a knot. Branch was cut off.
Yeah.
And from years of, that tree's old.
Yeah.
Older than the church. So from years of just rain and sleet and snow, it's discolored, and that's what it is. It's a knot in the tree.
It is in the shape of what, like when we think of your traditional picture of the Virgin Mary, it's in that shape, but I don't know that this would qualify quite as a miracle. It's a coincidence more than a miracle. Would you agree?
I don't know. You got to go miracle if it's religious.
Why is it, like, every once in a while, somebody will get a potato chip that's shaped like Spiro Agnew, and nobody ever says, well, that's a miracle. Spiro Agnew is coming back through some Pringles potato chips. Nobody ever says that unless it's a religious figure. Then everybody goes, well, that's got to be a miracle. What else could that possibly be?
Listen to the question you're asking. It takes God to create a miracle. So why would Spiro Agnew have a miracle happen?
Wendy, I consider potato chips to be a miracle. To me, to take a potato and make those potato chips, that qualifies as a miracle. So,
and I don't mean to be disrespectful of this miracle, but it looks like a ghost.
It does have a ghostly aura to it.
I mean, just like, you know, a ghost.
I know.
I guess she would be a ghost, the Holy Ghost.
How long? Let's say you go there under the belief that it may or may not be a miracle. How long do you stand there for before you go, all right, it's part of the bark of the tree. Like, do you stay there for days? Like,
no.
When they did this, remember when they had this underpass story years ago, people would camp out there. They would spend the night there. They had to close the lanes.
Yeah. I know, it was terrible. And Hubbard's Cave, it was big time busy area, and they had to close things down.
Right.
I would take it in. And as soon as I felt the spirituality I had received, then I would be free to move along.
Move on, and the rest of your life would be more fulfilled.
It makes me feel good looking at it, but
Wendy, I went to the Grand Canyon when I was a kid. I lasted 9 minutes. I'm like, that is a big hole. What else?
What's for lunch?
What else do we have to do today? So it takes a lot, you know, to get me excited, I guess. But I would look at that. I mean, it'd be cool to go and see it and go, that is shaped very similarly to the Virgin Mary.
Hey, if anybody's out there, 312-981-7200, it's in the, do we have an address? I might stop by on the way home. I'm flying tomorrow and I'm scared to fly, so.
Don't be, well, then this would be a good trip for you.
Yeah.
This would be a pilgrimage. Dress like a pilgrim.
I do like buckles.
It doesn't say the address.
All right,
it just says
Kevin's.
The South Deering neighborhood. In your GPS, just put Miracle in South Deering neighborhood.
Hey,
and
Siri.
Get you there.
Where is St. Kevin's Church in Chicago?
The only option I see is St. Kevin's Roman Catholic Church on South Torrance Avenue.
Wow, she said it with such finality.
Bless you. Oh, she just said bless you.
The only option I see. Even that got ecumenical on us.
Good word.
The only option I see.
I'm not sure I understand.
Uh-oh.
She heard your ecumenical.
Oh, I'm sorry, Siri. I apologize.
All right, well, I'm gonna map quest.
Go take a look, see if it's a miracle or not. I'm trying to think. You have the power. You're a minister in some church on the internet.
That
don't you have
not,
the power to declare something a miracle?
That doesn't go over well with the Catholic religion.
No.
So ixnay on the
right.
Universal Church.
You can
A.
marry people, but you cannot declare things miracles.
No.
All right.
Although, I have to check my handbook.
See what it says. Read the fine print. We'll take a break. News from Steve and then more. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Sweet home Chicago, home of the blues.
Isn't that pretty? Isn't that nice?
I'm going to call you Blind Billy Jefferson.
You can call me that if you want. I'm all right with that. That's one of the many aliases that I've cashed checks under in the city of Chicago.
A.K.A.
Dane Neal is here for part of a mini version of the Dane Neal Show. You can hear him on WGN Plus, correct?
Yes. Yes, this is the miniest of all the versions, yes.
Well, it's a little mini version. It's sponsored by Resurrection University. Just wanted to get our proud sponsor in.
Nice. Oh, great stuff they're doing over there, and excited to share more from ResU as we go forward.
Since we're talking about Blues Fest, you have brought up a multitude of guests. Dane, who are they?
Yeah, so always kind of filling the room with guests because they've got so much great things to share. And when it comes to the city and great events going on, DCASE does that, the Department of Cultural Affairs and Special Events. Jennifer Johnson Washington, she is in studio. She's the director of programming there. We got Mary May, the communications director. When events happen in the city, they don't happen by themselves. This team is the one that pulls them all together and brings them to the people. And guys, welcome to WGN.
Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
We're very proud of what's going on with all these events in the city. You guys have been doing a bang-up job. The last few years especially have just been magnificent.
Well, thank you. We're very fortunate to work for the Department of Cultural Affairs and Special Events. We bring all the summer free programming to Chicagoans and our visitors.
Yes, free programming.
That's a key word.
That's the key. That's what sets us apart from other cities. We're rolling up this weekend on the Chicago Blues Festival, but we also do Taste of Chicago, the Chicago Jazz Festival, Summer Dance, Dancing in the Park, and all of the summer series you see in Millennium Park. That includes workouts, films, music. And so you can't say you have nothing to do in the city.
It's one of the most beautiful cities architecturally. There's
sure.
so much to do there. We always talk about the food scene and everything going on. But as far as the events, the city really does it. And they have a huge commitment to that going on. Of course, Chicago, a great place to be. But this weekend, as great as it can possibly be, as Blues Fest is here.
Yeah.
And in the studio with us, we've got multi-Grammy nominee, Emmy Award winner, blues superstar, Billy Branch. Billy, welcome to WGN.
Hey, Billy.
Thank you. Good
Thanks
to be
for
here.
Being here.
Thank you for having me.
Just by hearing your voice, you say to yourself, that man must know something about the blues. It's in your voice. You can't help yourself.
Well, you know, they say I've got Lou Rawls's talking voice, but I didn't quite nail his singing voice.
What is it about this city and the blues? Why do they go so well together, do you think?
Well, you know, the blues exploded here, making Chicago has long been designated as the blues capital of the world. First and second generation blues men, you know, Muddy Waters and Howlin' Wolf, Little Walter, Sonny Boy, Willie Dixon, and, you know, on and on. They migrated here for a better life, And the blues became electrified right here. A lot of it actually started on Maxwell Street, yeah, where the musicians would play for pass the hat money. And this is where people come from all over the world. Every year for the Blues Festival, but throughout the year, just to have the blues experience in the clubs.
And there are so many great clubs around here. Kingston Mines, you have Buddy Guys, of course.
Right.
Chess Records was here.
Chess Records was here and is now housed by the Willie Dixon Foundation, known as Blues Heaven, 2120 South Michigan. You know, other clubs, Rose's Lounge,
yep,
Blues Chicago, and then an assortment of neighborhood lounges throughout the throughout the city.
Harlem Avenue Lounge right in Berwyn next to a White Castle. That's always fun to go see some blues and get some sliders.
Sure.
I had Artist's Lounge the 27 years every Monday on the south side, and we just closed a little under 3 years ago.
Really?
Yeah. Every month, 27 years.
Billy, when you hear, I'll use rock and roll as an example.
Okay.
There's a California version of rock. There's an East Coast version. There's a Seattle version. Can you, when you hear a performer or a band, can you figure out the influence of what part of the country they're from?
Sometimes. But to me, Chicago is, you know, sets the bar.
Yeah.
Because you travel around, and I hope I'm not insulting anyone, but it seems to me that even by comparison, in some cases, what we could consider some of the mediocre bands here would be like top flight in
a lot
of other places,
yeah,
because the bar is so high. That legacy of Muddy and Wolf and people like Otis Rush, who we're honoring, you know, and Buddy Guy and Junior Wells. I mean, when we were youngsters, those of us who were fortunate enough to have been interned under those guys, you had to come on with it.
Yeah.
Or you wouldn't be back on that stage. You had to really, it was almost like intensive internship,
yeah,
learning the blues over that amount of time.
What a great way to learn, though.
Yeah.
Be thrown into the fire.
Well, and it's a fire that's going on, you know, 365 days a year. Like you mentioned, Wendy, there's so many great places to see the blues, but here, and Billy kind of mentioned, you know, the world kind of converges here for Blues Fest, but it doesn't happen all by itself. There's so much planning that goes into it. Billy, of course, you've been on the planning committee, making sure that when people come from all over the world to experience, they're experiencing the best blues in the best way. And of course, Jennifer, the team, you guys are making an event that people can enjoy.
Yeah, it's really done by a big team of people, everyone from corporate sponsorship to programming to marketing and PR to all of that work really hard to put together a show that we think that will be enjoyable to everyone. On site, we have sponsors doing interactive booths. We have food vendors. We have food trucks. Mary can mention some of the vendors that are going to be out there this weekend.
Yeah, some of the great, we do have some new vendors that are going to be out there this weekend. Pork and Mindy's.
Oh,
yeah.
Jeff Morales.
Chicago's Doghouse. Guess's world famous fried chicken, Connie's Pizza, of course, Star of Siam, some of our originals that we, you know, have been there for many years, Robinson's Ribs, BJ's Market. But, you know, that's going to go with, you know, grab a beer, have some food, listen to some of the, you know, world's greatest blues music.
You know, that's doing a lot of stuff related and kind of in the food space, and certain events have been kind of upgraded and elevated, bringing great food in with the great music. But Billy, is there like a traditional blues food? I think of it, you know, kind of a smoky room and maybe some some cocktails, but is there like blues food?
Well, you know, coming from the South, the first thing you think of is like catfish and ribs, and then, you know, I got to be honest. I'm not from Mississippi. I didn't come from the South. But, you know, I was around the cats, and they like that, you know, down home.
Comfort food.
Well, guess you could call it that. But, you know, you talk to blues cats, they'll start talking about black-eyed peas and neck bones and greens and cornbread. And,
they're comfort,
you know, which
food,
I like most of it. I might draw the line at chitlins, but
yeah.
Although I'm not supposed to say that,
because
I'm a blues man.
Right.
And what a harmonica great you are.
Thank you.
You're amazing. And I bought this little book, you know, How to Play Harmonica. Mm. It's a little paperback book.
Yeah.
I think the best I got was playing along to Billy Joel's Piano Man. That was really all I could do. Can you give us a little harmonica playing?
Sure. You know, I've been teaching. I was one of the pioneers of blues in schools. I've been teaching blues in schools since 1978. And I have former youngsters that I run into that now have children, I think grandchildren of their own. But so I gave you a harp, didn't I, Dan? I should have given you a lesson on the air.
Oh, Dane, that would have been great.
That would have been frustrating.
To watch Dane go from a novice to a professional right before our ears.
It's all about the teacher, Bill.
Magnificent. Billy, can I ask a quick favor, though?
Sure, sure.
We need to take a quick break, but we're so anxious for you to play.
Okay.
So give us a minute. We'll hear some fantastic music and find out more about the Blues Fest in just a little bit. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
And today's segment with Dane Neal is sponsored by Resurrection University. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. And where did we leave off?
With the anticipation of not only Billy, of course, an amazing legend on the harmonica, but he was going to play a little bit for us and kind of go through some of the essentials of the harmonica world. But during the break, we found one of the harmonicas that he had with, and I guess Wendy, you are going to expand on the opportunity with the paper book by learning with the master.
That's what I got.
Excellent. That's outstanding. Billy, you got to be jealous. You hear that?
Oh, man. I don't know, man. I might have to leave.
All right.
We don't have a ton of time, but we'd really love you to grace us with your harmonica playing, if you wouldn't mind.
Okay. That's something kind of quick, short.
Whatever you want.
I could do
that's
that.
A, you, yeah, could probably do that.
Fantastic!
Wow!
Fantastic!
That's excellent!
Oh,
so
you.
Good. You do. I couldn't help but notice your cheeks, not quite to the extent of Dizzy Gillespie, but your cheeks are very much a part of the harmonica playing, aren't
they? Well, you have to blow and you know, suck in, blow and
It's
a workout.
Yeah. It's one few times that somebody says you suck that it's
Why is the harmonica oftentimes referred to as a harp? Well, I don't understand that.
That has been the topic of discussion, and my own theory is that it just has that heavenly sound when you play. Got a heavenly sound.
It does.
It does. Well, it's a mouth
does.
Harp, right? I mean,
right.
That's where harp came from, but it plays a little differently.
But you never hear a guy who plays a harp, nobody ever would refer to that as a harmonica. It doesn't go two ways.
A hand harmonica.
A hand harmonica, right.
It should be.
That's a whole different instrument. There's going to be stuff like that, music like that, inspiration like that, amazing stuff happening throughout the course of the entire weekend, not only at Blues Fest at official events, and they're going to give information on where to go for the site to see the lineup on and all the things that you guys have planned, but also there's a lot of really cool events happening, and Billy's going to be at one that's happening even in and around the official fest.
Billy will be playing at Kingston Mines after Blues Fest, and Blues Fest is, you know, starts Friday through Sunday. For the full lineup and details, you can go to chicagobluesfestival.us. We're open each day from 11 to 9:30, and it's free admission.
That's
so everybody
fantastic.
Come on down.
It's a great time, really.
Yeah. And Jennifer and Billy, are there some things that are like really big highlights as you guys put the planning together? Some kind of can't miss? Of course, you want to see the whole thing.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Some of this year's festival headliners include Shamika Copeland, mm-hmm. Little Ed and the Blues Imperials, Tommy Castro and the Painkillers, Fred Wesleyan and the New JBs, Irma Thomas, Wee Willie Walker and the Wee R's, Eddie the Chief Clearwater, Ronnie Earl and the Broadcasters, and many, many more.
And don't forget the Otis Rush tribute, right?
Oh, yeah?
Sunday evening, 8:30 p.m., our Otis Rush tribute. Everyone should be there. Don't miss it.
I couldn't help but to notice, Jennifer, that some of the performers, not all, but some have diminutive-sounding names. There's a little man. There's a Wee Willie guy. Will people in the crowd be able to even see these performers?
they'll be able to see them.
All right.
That's they're keeping it real. They don't want to have this big tood, so just humble and genuine.
Right.
That's why the diminutive titles.
Oh, okay. I get it now.
That's right.
Minuscule Brad will be there.
He'll be there.
These people have
good.
been maligned over the years because, look, think about all the songs that start, I woke up this morning, we get up early.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Right,
yeah,
hard workers
and humble, like you said, all the little people.
Yep. Because last year, I remember you guys had to put up a giant magnifying glass in front of the stage because the crowd could not see the performers. I'm glad we've learned from
we
that.
We are fortunate to have big screens to help everyone see.
And with the magnification of the sun, a couple people got burned,
yeah,
so they couldn't bring
that
back. That
turned ugly.
Billy Branch, you have a new record out. How new is Blue Shock?
Well, considering there were 15 years in between releases and it's 2 years old, it's still relative. It's still new.
It is
all right.
New.
Most recent, I should
say.
Yeah,
it's fairly new, and we were proud of it, and it came out on Blind Pig, and Blue Shock was an apt title because it did not all traditional straight blues, but a kind of mixture of genres, a little R&B, a little funk, a little soul, and a little rock in there.
That's what it's all about, and that's, the blues had a baby, and they named it rock and roll.
There
That's really where it came from.
Yeah.
That's what Muddy said, and it was true.
The blues done had a baby. I guess I should have said that right.
That's better. That's even better. Do you still do it on, is it still available on vinyl, or is it downloadable only? How do people get it?
It's on CD and downloadable.
Yeah, not vinyl, though.
Not vinyl.
No? Okay.
Mm-mm.
All right.
And Billy, social media is such a big part of the way that musicians share what it is that they do,
mm-hmm.
where they're going, all their adventures. Like, where can people keep up with you? Of course, they'll see you at Kingston Mines, but where can they keep up with you on a regular basis?
Kingston, the website is billybranch.com on Facebook, Kingston Mines After Party this weekend, next weekend, Saturday, Rose's Lounge, Chicago's Friendliest Lounge. Yeah.
And
we'll find you.
And Jennifer and Mary, the site where people can get all the information on the events, the timing, the lineup, and all that?
Well, for the Chicago Blues Festival this weekend, chicagobluesfestival.us. But for all of our free events, cityofchicago.org/dcase.
Mary and Jennifer, it's going to be another great year. There's no doubt about that. Thank you both for being here. And
Thank you.
Great Billy Branch, you sound fantastic.
Thank you.
You always do.
Honor to meet you, sir.
It is an absolute honor.
Thank you.
Excellent.
Dane, not so much of an honor, but we love to have you.
It's okay. I'm just happy to be in the honored just relative area, I guess, right?
Can I just, real quick, for those people who've never gone, it is one of the best family events. And seriously, you see some of the best live music of any genre.
Sure.
You know, I mean, it's Chicago Blues Fest, but I really encourage people to come. It's a wonderful, wonderful time.
Beautiful. Thank you guys all for being here. Dane, we'll see you tomorrow. You're coming in tomorrow
to
do some fill-in.
Yep, and then until then, for those people that can't wait, Dane Neal Show at WGN Plus and AccessAppetite.com.
Excellent. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Take a
Thank
quick
you.
Break, and then the news, and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Hey, if you're lucky today and you look up in the sky's blue, there are some clouds, you might see the opening of The Simpsons as you're driving into the city today.
It does look a little similar, you're right.
Do you watch The Simpsons pretty religiously,
Yeah.
I
love it.
We'll find out exactly how many years it's been on, but is it the longest running animated series on television?
Oh, by far. Yeah, I think it's 27 years, right? Something like that.
Well, we've got a Simpsonologist we're going to talk to in just a second. A few weeks ago, maybe a month ago, they did a special Simpsons, which I like. They keep it fresh. They do different things.
Mm-hmm.
This was at the very end, the last 3 minutes. They had Homer sitting there in animated form, voiced, of course, by Dan Castellaneta, and people were calling in phone calls to talk to Homer.
Right.
And you watched it as well. It didn't go swimmingly. There was a problem with the phone connection, kind of like we have here at WGN.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit of a delay going on.
Mm-hmm.
But there was one question that he was asked, and they wanted to know, do you prefer Chicago deep dish or New York style pizza? Now, Homer's response was, let's see, I prefer Chicago deep dish because I like Italian better than Chinese. I didn't really get that. I still don't know if I do.
Not sure I do either.
But we have a Simpsonologist, a writer, a teacher, a sci-fi comics geek, Karma Waltonen. Hi, Karma. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on.
Sure. Now, you and your Chicago partner, Denise DuVernay, co-wrote The Simpsons in the Classroom. And why do you think Homer made the right choice by choosing Chicago deep dish?
Because he loves cheese.
You know
right?
what? That is the end of discussion. Yeah. And there's no cheese in Chinese food. Is that? I never got that.
Well, I mean, you know, Chicago is really famous for having more of everything, right? So the crust is thicker and there's way more cheese on it. And of course, Homer's going to go for the slice of pizza that's going to give him the most pizza.
That makes perfect sense, doesn't it?
It does. Come on. So how many years has The Simpsons been on the air now? How many seasons?
We are on season 27, but it was on the Tracy Ullman show as a short for a couple years before then. So it got its own show in 89, but it was on the Tracy Ullman show as early as 87.
In a very archaic form.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
So different, right?
It was really different, but a lot of the staff and crew and everybody is the same. So the voices are the same people. You have the same music editor from back then. David Silverman was working on the animation that early. So, I mean, the show changed, of course, when it got its own show. They said, well, if this is going to be a thing, we should polish it a bit.
Why was Homer's voice so Walter Matthau-like during the Tracy Ullman shorts?
I think that it's because the show was more about Bart and Bart getting in trouble. And Homer, if you watch those really early episodes, he's much more together.
Yeah.
Like, you know, much more together. And he's
not as bumbling.
He's sort of the regular bumbling dad.
Yeah.
But he's not Homer yet. And then I think they figured out once they had the sitcom that really, if they exaggerated the Homer character, that's what we would be drawn to. And the show sort of lost its central focus being about Bart. And we really, you know, came to embrace Homer in a much different way. And so his voice solidified and got a lot goofier because he got a lot goofier.
And Karma, would you also agree that the show really hit its stride when they realized not just Homer, not just Bart, not just the Simpson family, but explore Springfield and find out all the rich characters, right?
Yeah. I mean, this menagerie of people is so amazing. And, you know, we come to know their stories and we care for them, you know, that we have these relationships with the Quickie Mart, Apu, you know, who they're getting their food from, but who they're also genuinely friends with. And being able to explore those things are great.
All right. Well, when are we going to find out about Maggie? She's not really growing up, is she?
None of them are growing up.
I know, but I'd still that's where it's the more noticeable part of it. You know, Lisa and Bart, you feel like in your mind they've aged, they've moved on to various different activities in life, and they're growing up. But Maggie's still, you know.
Well, I mean, but she has these moments where she shows that she does have this rich inner life. It's just we're not focusing on her. But she has a nemesis. Right? The baby with the unibrow.
Yeah. Oh, that's right.
Yeah. Brezhnev the baby.
Who's, you know, her enemy. And she, in some of the very earliest cartoons, when she's playing with her blocks, she's doing things with them, and most people aren't looking, but she's like setting up E equals MC squared.
So she's more like Lisa than Bart.
Yeah.
She's way more like Lisa than Bart, although they did have an episode recently where Bart uses her to help prank people.
Mm-hmm.
And she seems actively engaged in it. And Homer actually comes to him and says, I don't want her becoming like you. So knock it off. And sort of, I want her to use her intelligence for good. Not
evil.
Yeah.
Because Bart's really smart. It's just he's smart in a completely different way. Some of the pranks he pulls are amazing, and they take planning and they take effort. I think my favorite one is when he repaints all of the teacher parking lot lines in the teacher parking lot to be too small.
Mm-hmm.
So all, they all get mad at each other because they can't get out of their cars mm-hmm. and they're accusing each other of parking too close. I mean, that, he repaints the whole parking lot.
He's brilliant.
An evil genius.
Sure. Sure.
Yes, totally.
Now, Carmen, the book you co-wrote, The Simpsons in the Classroom, implies that you could go to a school and learn about The Simpsons right there in a classroom. That's reality?
That's reality in a lot of classrooms, including mine. I mean, I have a class that's just on The Simpsons called The Simpsons Satire and Postmodernism, and we sort of look at both what's happening in the genre as a satire, but also sort of looking at American culture through the show. So what does it tell us about religion in America? What does it tell us about different ethnicities? What does it tell us about politics?
Is this high school? Is it college? What grade is this? And
I'm at the college level.
Has anyone ever flunked this class? Because if they do, they're really stupid.
I haven't had anybody flunk the class. I had a guy who came really close, but that's because he wasn't doing the work. And, you know, just kind of like, really, your homework is to watch The Simpsons
right.
to write
it's
about
not
it.
That
you
hard.
Can't
right.
do that.
He deserves to flunk. You should have flunked him.
Now, you brought up the religious angle, Karma. I know there's been at least one and possibly more than one book written about the fact that The Simpsons has been called one of the most religious shows on television, that there's a lot of people who really value a lot of the characters on the show are extremely religious. You agree with that?
I do. And I was actually asked to give a talk, a sermon kind of thing, at our Unitarian church here in Davis last summer about that. And so, yeah, I was talking about how there's really a view of American religion that's kind of nostalgic. Most of the characters go to church
yeah.
in that town or to synagogue or wherever they're going. You know, this is still the place that mom is dragging you to.
That's true. It never really
and
sunk in.
The whole community is there. And that is a picture of an America from my childhood, but it's not a picture of America right now.
Yeah.
And Homer so trying really to get out of church a lot of the times. It's a typical mm-hmm. family growing up here.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then you also have so many episodes where they really explore what it means to have faith. There's an episode where Lisa decides she doesn't like the direction her church is going, and she has to find a new spiritual path for herself. And so you see not only that journey, but you see her mother getting extremely upset that her daughter is going to leave their religion.
Yeah. Yep.
And trying to bribe her and blackmail her and control her.
Mm-hmm.
In all of these pretty fantastic ways. But I, as someone who was raised in a religion that I'm no longer a part of, I was raised Southern Baptist, which is just not me.
Yeah.
But I had to go through something very similar and, you know, with a similar reaction from my family when I'd say, this is not what I believe.
I know that Reverend Lovejoy from time to time has questioned his own faith. I know that Ned Flanders is deeply religious, has had questions. Krusty's father, Rabbi Krestovsky, they had an interesting relationship about religion. So, yeah, it's very evident.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's all over. And, yeah, a lot of people have, of course, written about how there's a fundamental affection for religion when that religion is used for good. I mean, we're going back to good and evil here, right? But if you're using religion to judge other people or to hurt other people, or use mind control over other people, that's wrong. But if it's about finding out what is the right decision to make because you're having a crisis,
Karma,
then that's always seen as a good thing.
Karma Waltonen on the line. Karma's your real first name because I'm digging it.
It is. It is.
Hippie parents? Hippie Baptist parents?
my mother was a Southern Baptist. My father was a Buddhist. And so she let him pick the name. Which actually, in other countries, it's a boy's name. I guess that wasn't important. So, you know, I got this cool name out of it. Their marriage didn't last very long.
Oh.
Mix that Southern Baptist with a Buddhist and you don't get anything really good. But, no, but it's an interesting name to carry with me, for sure. It does mean I also have to try to do the right thing, right?
The Simpsons in the
reminder.
Yes, absolutely. The Simpsons in the Classroom is the name of the book. You don't have to be enrolled in Carmel Waltman's class to enjoy it. And it's I have to read it because really I didn't think about all the religious mentions in that. And you know, Marge is a pretty decent mom. She really does try. Mm-hmm. Oh, my special little guy. And Bill, someone's requesting your Homer. Some listener's daughter wants to hear some.
What do they want to hear?
Do you do any impersonations from The Simpsons, Karma?
I don't usually. I mean, you know, Ralph is fairly easy, right? My cat breath smells like cat food. You know,
beautiful.
He gets just kind of this baby.
You can do Nelson, too. Come on.
He's a little gravelly for me. Well, there's a ha-ha, but also the show you later. You know,
oh, beautiful.
Quite do
nicely
that, but
done.
I want to take her class, Bill.
Fly us in, Karma. We need to take your class.
I know. We'd have such fun together.
No.
Now, where is you said you teach at the college level. Where are you located right now?
I'm at the University of California, Davis.
All right, well, if somebody's out there and wants to take the Simpsons class, if you flunk it, you're going to have to deal with us, because really, it's watching
no
the
excuse.
Simpsons.
Yeah, easy. Karma, great to talk to you, and we hope the book does well. It's The Simpsons in the Classroom, written by Karma Waltman. Have a great week.
Thank you. I had a great time.
Good. We'll take a quick break, and then we'll do some news. News is coming up at the end of the hour, and then more show, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
And we should also apologize to former Chicago resident Denise DuVernay. She co-wrote that book with Carmel Waltonen. And
Why are we apologizing to her?
Because we just said Karma wrote it.
Oh,
and
they co-wrote it.
Yeah.
Right.
I'll just give her some credit.
That's fine.
But they actually did, they have been teaching this Simpsons class for more than a decade. Exercises, prompts, and even syllabi that have proven successful in their own courses.
They've got syllabi there?
Yes, they do. They're more important than we are with the syllabi.
Wow.
I would love to take a class on The Simpsons.
You know what was going through my mind all through that? I was thinking this is the difference. It's a generational difference. When I was in college, if I saw that was available at my school, absolutely. I would have taken it twice. But if my kids, now they're in college, if they said, hey, Dad, one of the classes we're taking is Simpsons, I'd go, that's where my money's going, is for you can take a Simpsons class.
In a weird way, that's why grades are not that important. Seriously.
I know.
Because to get your GPA up and take the Simpsons class and get an A.
Right.
I mean, I guess if you're going to go into animation or one of your daughters is looking to direct something, maybe.
She wants to be involved in the film business, so I guess it's pertinent to her. Yeah. But still.
You would be taking it for a different reason.
Right.
Because it's fun. I wish all classes were like that.
But didn't you take a class or two that you thought, this really won't benefit me in any way, but it'll keep me entertained for a while?
No.
You didn't do any of those?
No. In fact, it seems like our whole neighborhood is taking consumer economics this summer, or consumer ed. That's what we called it in high school.
Yeah, right.
And so I asked Michael what he learned, and he said, we learned how to balance a checkbook.
Oh.
And I thought that was great when we were in high school and we learned how to use it.
Right.
I can't speak for you, but I haven't balanced a checkbook in probably 10 years.
Oh, really?
You have the app for your bank.
Right,
it's all right there.
It's online.
You know how much is in there at any given moment.
Yeah. That has changed dramatically, hasn't it?
Terry Savage just came in to yell at me because I don't balance a checkbook.
And she wasn't even scheduled to be here today. She drove all the way in from her home for this.
I was listening in the green room because I'm coming on with Steve, and I heard that. First of all, no kid balances a checkbook because everything's electronic and they pay their bills online.
I just saw that.
That's what I was saying.
And
yeah,
number
true.
One. Number two, they all have Mint, the free app that tells you how much what's in your budgeted categories. Don't go out to dinner tonight. You've spent all your money. And that's what they're teaching in our classrooms, because they're teaching it from the teachers who have no idea. I've spent my whole life trying to get financial education.
I wish you could teach Michael for summer school, because he's going. And this is another thing. For consumer ed, I wouldn't expect this to be chemistry. You got to go 4 hours a day for 3 weeks.
Absolutely.
This is consumer ed. I mean, really.
Can I ask you on the air where what suburb they're in? Or what,
oh, we're in LaGrange, LT High School. LaGrange? It's
okay,
you know.
Maybe one day I'll drive out there and give their class consumer ed 101. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to barge
you're
in.
You're fine.
I was sitting there getting ready to go on with Stephen.
No, you're fine.
You did mean to barge in because you did it.
No,
and that's
right
all right.
I'm already behind the secret door. But
am I the last person that even uses checks anymore, Terry? Do people still use them?
No,
there
are a few a year. First of all, you should write your tax estimates and so forth in paper checks.
Yeah.
But you know that, well, it must be 15 years ago, I went around on a tour around the country for a company called CheckFree, which was originally the engine behind online bill pay.
Yeah.
Explaining to people that the security is so much greater when you pay online through the bank's interwire banking system, which is so secure, than if you write a check, put it in the envelope. First of all, half the time you put the PO address backwards and you have to unseal it and or ruin a stamp.
Yeah.
And how many hands does a check pass through? Whereas a click, if you pay your bills online, plus if you download into Quicken, you can get everything by categories. How much did I, you know, if you say, didn't I pay that doctor bill 3 months ago? Why are they billing me? Or is my electric bill so much more this year than last year in June or May or December, whatever it is?
Yeah.
You can click on how much did I pay to, say, Commonwealth Edison.
But even
and
you
it'll
know,
show you for the last year or two.
But that's
with
amazing.
Sites getting hacked left and right.
No, it doesn't matter. Online bill pay is not getting
hacked.
It's safe. Okay? Yeah. It is the same bank interwire system that handles trillions of dollars of money transfers every day. So that is not what's getting hacked.
Except with my checks, Terry, I have beautiful pictures of seascapes that I get to
You enjoy staying up late and getting writer's cramp and opening those things and finding the envelopes and going waiting in line at the post office and buying stamps.
It takes too long,
doesn't
it?
Every single bank offers online bill payment.
That does not
mean that you cannot write a paper check. Mm-hmm. And it will come through because you're going to go online every week. Check
I can
the balance
look
in your
at mine.
Account.
My check comes up, a picture of it that I wrote.
Exactly. Yeah. It's so much easier.
Right.
Blast into the 2000s. You know what? We have to take a break because we can't hog you.
You should be on with Steve Bertrand today.
I think I'll come
go
in
on with Steve. Okay.
Minutes.
All right. Good.
Okay,
Terry
bye.
Savage coming up with Steve Bertrand. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder here, 720 WGN.
Tim,
and
thanks.
The Bill and Wendy show continues.
Yes, it does. We did part of it earlier, Wendy, and now we will continue with our show starting right now.
You know what we should call this second half of the show?
Part two?
Already in progress.
Already in progress. I like that. That has a nice ring to it. Kim, did you say that the Bears convention, it was the Bears convention
that's
coming?
The Family Fest.
The Bears Family,
Fest
is coming. That's going to be fun.
August 6th. Yes.
I have the Tylenol concession this year, so I should make a lot of money, I think.
You need something a lot stronger than Tylenol.
I know. Morphine. I have the morphine.
You're booth, such a drip.
The morphine booth at the Bears Family Convention. It'll be fun. Stop by. Say hello.
Are we going to have to hear this all season long until they do something?
No. I think what I'll do is I'll do the same thing last year. I'll watch a game, and then I'll just give up on them after one game.
Just have no expectations, and if something great happens, then you'll be
pleasantly
surprised and
I like
it'll be
that.
All good.
That's a good idea.
When the Bears make the wild card, Bill, you're not allowed to root for them.
Until they change the wild card to all 32 professional NFL teams can be in the playoffs, I don't see that happening. If they change the rule, and they may, then they're fine.
I can't have this bitterness on the air.
Or you can just come with me to the green and yellow side.
Yeah. No, don't do that
I'm
either.
I'm thinking about it. I am seriously thinking about it.
Come on.
Imagine the fun of watching a football team that knows how to advance the ball on a field. That would be fun.
But Aaron Rodgers isn't even eating dairy anymore.
I know. Did you see that?
He's lost a lot of weight.
He's gone dairy-free.
He's lost a lot of weight.
All the quarterbacks to go dairy-free.
Right. He's in Wisconsin, America's dairy land, and he goes, no more dairy products for me.
You know what? But I think he's probably the only person in Wisconsin who'd be given a pass.
Right.
If it helps,
that's true.
Go right ahead.
Is he lactose intolerant? What's the big deal?
I think it's just a for diet.
He's a turncoat.
Yeah.
He's good looking. I hate my husband gets so mad at me when I say that.
You're crazy.
I am. How am I crazy?
You don't think he's good
looking? I think he's very... just every man.
Kim, I got to tell you, there are various guys on Chicago sports teams that I will not bring up on the air.
You can. Why won't you?
Because you and Kevin don't think he's attractive. You guys are just jealous, and you proved it right there with Aaron Rodgers.
Well, tell me. I'll tell you if I think he's attractive. Don't listen, guys.
All right.
I don't want to say it because now...
No, I don't mind.
You can say it.
We've covered this before, I believe.
I think you're, I don't want to bust you guys on the
name?
Air.
Really?
Because of you guys. You should feel foolish. If you ever meet him, he's going to go, what, so you think I'm ugly?
Oh, man. I'm on your side on Aaron Rodgers. He's a handsome man, and the fact that he's so good at football makes him even more handsome somehow.
A milk-free handsome man.
And he's dating somebody who's
Olivia Munn.
Olivia Munn. Yeah.
That's why you like him.
That's not why.
Oh, actually, that's why you should hate him.
I like him because he's a quarterback, and we don't have this here locally, but he understands which team to pass to. I think that's kind of a plus if you're a quarterback. Like before the game, they sit down with Aaron Rodgers and they go, you're wearing green and yellow, throw it to other guys wearing green and yellow. And he goes, I can do that. And he does. We don't have a quarterback who does that.
There has to be a moratorium on Bears talk.
All right.
Cause I can't.
I wouldn't have brought it up, but I was so excited to hear that the Bears Family Fest.
You
is
were
coming.
Not. You brought
you're
it up to mock
family.
It. You can't do this all season.
I won't. And nobody wants to be more wrong about the Bears than me. I want to be wrong. I want them to win again.
You know what, Bill? Just start fresh. Go with the L.A. Rams.
That would be all right.
No, just start fresh with a new season of
right.
Bears football. Don't go with the Rams. Don't listen to Kim Gordon. She's a Packer fan.
No, come on. She knows. She's seen what it's like to win. It's been a long time.
How does that feel?
It's a good feeling.
It's been a long time.
It feels really good.
Is this Etta?
It is.
Hello, Etta.
I have sent you a million text messages.
Wendy and blocked you, Etta.
Huh?
Wendy blocked you. She put a blocker
no,
on
I
you.
No, I didn't.
Anyway, how about Gary Fensick in his time?
That was a handsome man.
Gary and a good quarterback.
He was not the quarterback. Gary Fensick never quarterbacked.
Who am I thinking of?
You're thinking of Cade McNown.
He's my awesome star.
Gary Fensick was a very attractive man
oh,
and
we're
a
going
nice
attractive.
Guy.
Yes.
Yeah.
And a decent football player, not
yeah,
a quarterback.
He was. Right. Right.
Yeah.
Jim McMahon was he had kind of an interesting look too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Party
yeah.
boy.
Yeah, he was a little crazy.
That's what we need. Don't you think that's what we need?
A
though?
Little bit of crazy.
I'm not kidding. A little
right.
bit of crazy goes a long way on the football field.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong right. with that. Agreed.
No, it makes it entertaining.
Etta, you have good taste in former Bears.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you, Etta.
Thank you. Text you later. I don't know.
She has sent you, she said, a bunch.
I don't know. Gary Fensick, 45, was he?
Oh, he's younger than that.
No, number.
Oh. Yeah, I think he could have been 40. I don't remember
his
number.
Yeah, I don't
number.
Know what happened. I just had a football fart.
Wow.
I did.
Trademark that quickly.
I just, I think Aaron Rodgers is a fine-looking man.
Yeah, all right.
And I might, I can't do it. I was going to say, if they don't do anything this year, I might make the switch to Kim's team.
See what I mean?
If you're going to switch to a team, okay, fine. Don't do the pack. Like, you can't. That doesn't make sense.
Once you go pack,
you never go
back.
That's true. That's
and
true.
And Romper Room will continue after these brief messages. 720 WGN. All right, my flowers are not dead yet. Going away for a long weekend, and I have someone house-sitting, and I have someone watering my tomatoes when I'm gone.
Two different people?
Yeah, I got like four
you got
people.
Got a big staff at the
I
house?
I do.
Wow.
I'm paying a lot of people to keep things
it's
under
like
control.
Downton Abbey over at your place.
It is. And I think I figured out why I like gardening so much.
Because why?
Because there are some naughty plants and shrubs, naughty names.
I don't understand. These are names of flowers that are...
Yeah, some
names?
I can't even say on the air.
Oh.
There's a list that was compiled from gardeningexpress.co.uk, so they can get a little more risque in the UK.
Sure they can. That's their nation's phrase, more risque in the UK. That's their their tourism slogan.
All right, well, some of the dirty plants or shrubs that you can put in your garden...
Yeah, oh, I can't wait. Now these are you're okay
legit.
To say these?
Well, some I can't say.
Oh,
some will have to use code words.
All right.
Can I say virgin thistle?
Yeah, I think you can say that. Sure.
All right, that's a spiky species of thistle. Easy for me to say. That's native to southwestern parts of the U.S.
The virgin thistle.
The virgin thistle. They get better.
Yeah. That one's not dirty. Do you think? I think.
Well,
that
no,
one's fine.
But you know where I'm going now.
All right.
Shag bark.
I'm sorry? What is this now? Shag bark.
Shag bark.
Yeah.
It's a 100-foot-tall plant. It can live 350 years.
Now, shag in England, for anyone who's ever seen any of the Austin Powers movies,
right,
is a euphemism for, you know,
the lovemaking?
For the making of the love.
Old carpeting.
For the old
for
carpeting.
Bill's house in the 70s.
Right, right. We used to water our shag carpeting. It would grow.
Did you ever shag on your shag carpeting?
That's personal. Nope.
All right. Well, those are the two I can say on the air. So the list is... All right, wait. There are... Can I say knobweed?
You can say... You can't call somebody a knobweed, but you can say it. Right. Steve, you've been here in the studio when Wendy has referred to me as a knobweed.
Yeah.
I'm telling you,
it's
that
is... uncomfortable.
Funny that you never are, though. But
that is a great insult. But it's also a plant. It's a shrub.
Yeah.
It has a sap that's used as a powerful antiseptic, much like the aloe.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Grows in Australia. Has a Latin name. Who knows? I'm not reading it. And
Knobweedius? Or something like that?
Yes.
Knobisweedus?
What about Sticky Willy?
What about Sticky Willy?
Thought that was taken care of.
He's going to be at Blues Fest, I heard.
Don't sit in the first three rows.
Oh, stop it!
You think Gallagher's bad.
Oh, my God. Again, these are dirty plants, basically.
These are
dirty.
I'm uncomfortable hearing these, Wendy.
Is Jack in the Pulpit on the list?
No, but
that
there's some I really
there.
Can't say on the air. All right, Sticky Willy has creeping, straggling stems that grow along the ground and over other plants. So careful or Sticky Willy will take over.
No one wants that.
They attach themselves with small hooked hairs. Nipple wart?
That's in the dirty version of Harry Potter. That's the school that the kids went to.
It's completely normal. It's not unusual at all.
No, that's common. Come
Absolutely.
On.
Absolutely.
I can't
on.
Find what the nipple wart is.
I think it's best
I
left
think
to
I
our imagination.
It's W-O-R-T.
Oh, that's better.
It's a
beautiful that's
plant.
Then that's fine.
Well, how would you spell wart?
W-A-R-T.
Well, wart. Yeah. But like,
that's how you spell wart.
With
like St. John's wort is W-O-R-T.
Because it's an herb or a plant.
Right.
A wart on your foot would be W-A-R-T.
Right.
But, okay.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That's true.
But Bertrand's doubting me.
No, I don't ever.
Steve knows.
Boy, you guys could be found on this tree or in this tree. It's the sausage tree.
That's not a real tree.
It is.
Yeah?
It's the sausage.
My autobiography.
And it says for men only on the cover.
It's in Africa, Starburst. And the little pods that are hanging from it. What does it look like is hanging from the tree? Sausages.
Sausages, it does. It looks like a sausage tree, and thus the name.
I can't say that one on the air.
What is it?
Hint at it. Can you hint at it?
Well, it boasts yellow daisy-like flowers, tufted seeds.
That's dirty.
And it's an herb, and...
You can't say it?
There was an ice cream place that served square ice cream.
Cock Robins.
Yes. Okay, take away the robin and add hold.
Oh, yeah, that you can say that.
Kukold.
Yeah, you can
okay,
say that.
But that's not it, but yes.
It's similar to that. It's very close.
How about the Family Jewels milkweed?
Wow.
These are real plants.
Botanists are pervs.
The Shaggy Soldier?
Yep.
That costs extra.
And you cannot...
If you go to your plant store and ask for that, they'll go, you got to go to the back room for that.
I remember watching that on Cinemax with the little line in the middle. It's really hard.
It's called Scrambled.
I called it Shaggy Soldier, but...
Zoinks!
These are actual plants. This is why I like gardening so much. And this last one I can't say on the air.
You can say the first part of it. And
stiff.
Then, yeah, the first part of it is stiff. And then I think if you wait 45 minutes or an hour, you can say the second half of it. But I don't think you
hey,
can say
Hey, did you ever
it.
Go to Cock Robin?
Yeah. You
there
can
you
say
go.
That. Okay, well. That's a plant. There's a plant called that?
Yeah, and I got to get one.
Wow.
Now?
No. I'm on the air right now. So it's a bit naughty in the gardener's world.
Boy,
but,
is it ever.
You know, have some fun.
That's
and
dirty.
The mirror.co.uk gave us
that's
this.
That's the place that has it?
That's why I like to garden.
I love it. I love it. All right, can I give you a highlight or two of some things that are coming up on today's show?
Please do.
The rest of today's show. Kristen McQuarrie is going to be with us from the Tribune to talk about what happened last night. Last night, of course, a key night when it comes to... Especially on the Democratic side, it seems now, well, more than seems now, it's obvious now Hillary Clinton has enough to be the presumptive candidate, as we've been saying for the last couple of weeks, on the Democratic side.
Girls rule.
So girls rule. Kristen will explain to us what exactly this means for Bernie Sanders. There's a meeting coming up tomorrow between our president and Bernie Sanders to try to decide what's going on there. And is Donald Trump in more trouble or not? He has said some things again that some are construing as racist. We'll find out what the aftermath of that is. And then at 2:05, this is really exciting. You and I both kind of fell in love with a television show a couple of months ago, The People versus O.J. Simpson.
It wasn't just us. I mean, really.
It did really well.
Yes.
It did really well. There's a man named Ezra Edelman who, even before that show was put together, The People versus O.J. Simpson, he began work on a documentary called O.J. Made in America. And people who have seen this said, even if you think you know everything there is to know about O.J. Simpson and the trial, wait till you see this, that it's really going to open a lot of people's eyes. So
O.J. is fascinating. I'm sorry. Not necessarily in a good way. He was a great football player. Did a book report on him when I was in grade school.
Yeah.
Really thought he was a fantastic athlete. Amazing.
Yeah.
But the story that happened is very intriguing to me. When I was watching The People versus O.J. Simpson, I completely forgot that he got off.
Oh, yeah.
I really did.
There, I don't know if you saw the story the other day, but a friend of O.J. Simpson says he fully expects O.J. in the near future to finally come clean and admit to the killings. So I'm anxious to get Ezra Edelman's take on that. If he believes that after all this time, O.J. will finally go, there's nothing left for me anymore to hide. I did it. He even wrote a book called If I Did It. So.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
So.
And I know that O.J. was upset because they don't have cable in the prison he's in Nevada, so he couldn't see The People versus O.J. Simpson.
Yeah.
Wonder if he's going to get a little look-see at O.J. Made in America.
A good question. So those are just some of the things that are coming up over the next 95 minutes. So stick around. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy, and it's WGN. Steve, thank you. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy. Joined in studio right now by Kristen McQuarrie,
the
columnist.
The ever smiling.
The always jovial Kristen McQuarrie, always in a good mood. Kristen, last night a lot went on politically, and Wendy and I were saying at the very beginning of the show, this is the farthest a woman has gone in terms of being the candidate or presumptive candidate for one of the two major parties. And yet, because of everything else that's gone on, it's kind of been overshadowed a little bit. Don't you agree?
I guess it has. I found myself a little surprised that all the coverage was focused on that last night. And then, of course, you have to like do this correction in your mind. Well, of course, you know, she is now officially, they have different ways that you can describe someone as the presumptive nominee. But because she won California, New Jersey, New Mexico, and South Dakota, she now hit that number that she needs of delegates. So she is the presumptive nominee. And so we got all the historic moment commentary last night. First woman. It's a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
But it's somebody we already know. I wanted it to be a fresh woman. You know what I mean? I feel bad saying that. And I'm not saying I'm not voting for her. But I do feel like, give us something new. It would have been more monumental, in my opinion, had it been a name that wasn't a president before.
That's true. And she has, you know, she was a U.S. Senator. She was Secretary of State. So Mary Schmeek actually has a pretty nice column in today's Tribune that talks about that and how it's just not getting the sort of attention that it did when maybe Barack Obama cinched it in 2008. Although I went back and looked at the coverage the night that he cinched the nomination on June 4th in 2008. And yes, there was, of course, lots of coverage that this was the first African-American nominee. But I almost felt like last night's coverage was heavier.
Did you really,
obviously leaked out by Clinton's campaign. I'm sure they had this ready. Everybody had the facts, the dates, the reasons that this was meaningful. And so that's what her campaign floated out, and that's what everybody went with last night.
If you're Bernie Sanders and you figure out...
I'm still going!
Really? It seems pretty evident at this point. So
is it a pretty much for sure a done deal?
Can we honestly say that? I mean, really? he did a marvelous thing. He brought a lot of people into the party who probably were just as disenfranchised as some of the Trump supporters on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
He created a movement. It was monumental, but it is midnight. Cinderella, get off the stage. I mean, really, he is pushing ahead I think saying he's going to stay with it until the convention.
Right.
You know, she hit the number. If you saw her rally last night, you might have even thought it was a Donald Trump rally. I mean, she filled Navy Yard, was it, in Brooklyn. The people are moving toward her. She is the nominee, and he just is starting to look really desperate, in my opinion.
So there's a sit-down tomorrow between President Obama and Bernie Sanders. What do you anticipate goes on at the sit-down?
I mean, I'm sure they're going to try to nudge him out and try to get him to be 100% in her camp and to bring, you know, his people over. I mean, I just don't even know how big of a story that is. Bernie Sanders supporters are never going to vote for Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
They will eventually come around. The worst
you
thing
think
they,
so?
Oh, absolutely.
I don't think so.
I do. The worst thing they could do is stay home, and that's what I think she's worried about is just them staying home. But there's just no... There's no path for a Bernie Sanders supporter to turn around and vote for Trump. I mean, they're the only thing they have in common is that they both sort of had this outsider mentality. We want to shake up Washington,
mm-hmm.
but ideologically completely different. Pro-immigration, pro-open border compared to Donald Trump. I want to build a wall. Big government, more healthcare spending, free college tuition on the Bernie Sanders side. You know, if Trump proves to be a true Republican, smaller government. You know, getting a hold of our debt on the other side. There's just no path for those two to walk together.
Right. Well, what if, here's a hypothetical for you. What if President Obama sits down with him and says, look, it's very important for everybody involved that you come on board and you endorse her. And he goes, yeah, I don't see it that way. What happens then?
He may not, though, right?
He may not. I mean, he has this feeling that he wants to show up in these states where people have supported him and knocked on doors for him, and he wants them be able to vote for him. I will note that in 2008, same thing happened. Obama clinched the nomination, and Hillary Clinton took maybe 3 or 4 days
mm-hmm.
before she officially stepped out.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he will do that. I hope he doesn't take this all the way to the convention. What a waste. And really, he's just, his time is up. It's time for him to go and to acknowledge that she is the nominee. He has no chance mathematically or otherwise.
Right.
So, you know, even Hillary Clinton called Obama in 2008, the night that he cinched, and they had a nice conversation and they were still friendly. And they need to do that in this race.
Here's my fear. Something that you said, that if you're talking about issues, Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders, completely different issues, and Hillary as well. But when you get somebody and you're all in camp for Bernie Sanders and he's not in the mix anymore, I just have this feeling, issues aside, people are going to say, I hate Hillary, I'm going Trump. So all of a sudden, the issues don't matter anymore. That's what scares me. You're like, what? There's no path for a Bernie Sanders follower to then vote for Trump. But if they hate Hillary so much, they might.
I really don't see it. Maybe a few, but Donald Trump is repulsive to this group of voters.
Yeah, I guess.
And Hillary Clinton, no, she's the establishment. They don't want her. She will have to court them a little bit, like any relationship. But I just don't see that big of a crossover.
But this is the core of what politics is and should be, Kristen, is which of the candidates do I hate and which one am I repulsed by? That's the way it should be.
Right. I mean, truly, do we ever really go to the ballot box skipping and happy and you're so excited to... No, you're most of the time, by the time a campaign has wrapped up, all the dirty laundry has been aired, you kind of hold your nose and vote for the least worst.
Right.
And so I don't expect that this is going to be any different.
We're getting some calls. We're at 312-981-7200. It is Kristen McQuarrie of the Chicago Tribune. Let's go to the calls. We'll start out with Nina. Nina, hi. You're on with us and with Kristen McQuarrie. What was your question or comment?
Hi. Yeah, I question whether if he thinks he has the support, Bernie Sanders will run as an independent.
Isn't it too late for that, or can he do that?
I mean, there's still talk of a third party on the Republican side. I just don't see how it's possible. You have to actually gather signatures, get on the ballot, collect votes. It would be very hard to do that this late in the game for a national. I mean, maybe, but they'd have to, again, every state has different rules about yeah. third party candidates. In our state, you have to collect a huge amount of signatures. You know, these rules are designed to protect the two main parties. So I don't think it's possible.
What if that did happen? And Nina, that's a great question. What if it did happen and Bernie was able to run as an independent?
What are his chances of winning? Still not very good, are
no,
they?
No, I don't think so. I mean, we do tend to be just a more, if you look at rough totals, there are more Democrats in this country than Republican voters on Election Day in November. So you have to be able to pull some of those Democratic voters to your side in order to win. And I think people are feeling the fizzling out and the loss of momentum with Bernie Sanders. And I think Hillary Clinton, if we want to place bets, I mean, I actually think probably she's going to be president. I don't see how Donald Trump can pull that independent middle of the road voter that I'm referring to.
Thanks for your call, Nina.
And Donald Trump, very smart strategically here, has on several occasions kind of goaded Bernie Sanders into being that third party candidate because he realizes, or the people behind him realize, that splits the Democratic vote very nicely and leaves him a better path. So he has on occasion said, yeah, if I'm Bernie Sanders, I run as a third party. Go do it, Bernie.
Go do it.
Right.
He tried last night, Trump. I don't know if you watched, but he gave his speech. He's been chastened by all of this rightly criticism of what he said about the judge, the federal judge unable to be fair in his case because he's Mexican American.
Right.
I mean, just like absurd. So Donald Trump gave a speech.
He was misconstrued. Come on, will you be nicer?
he gave his victory speech from his golf club in Los Angeles. And I was looking it up. I thought his golf club, maybe he's part of a golf club. No, it's Trump Golf Course in Los Angeles. It was a small little room of a bunch of rich white guys that he was at. And he used teleprompters this time because
You
got to keep him on a teleprompter. He did better. But, he has to be more careful. And we keep saying that, and he keeps screwing it up. So we'll see what happens.
Jack wants to talk to you, and that's what we do on this very radio station. We all have an opinion. But, Jack, now you think maybe Kristen McQuarrie might be wrong in this. Go ahead.
Well, I'm a Republican who would never vote for Trump, and I have been, there's been some stuff written. I'm in my car. I wish I could put my hands on it because I know you get these people who call in and say, I read this, and you know they just have to be full of whatever. But there's been stuff written that shows that 10 to 11% of Bernie Sanders people will vote for Trump. And I think it gets back to what you were saying earlier. There's just some people very disturbed, and they really don't follow issues. They just don't want the established candidates. They don't want to vote for the old guard. And the issues make no difference. They're just going to vote for different.
That's what scares me.
It's very scary to me, too.
Well, the 10 to 11%, although a significant number, it just seems natural. If your guy is out of the race, you're gonna vote for somebody if you're going to vote at all. So, yeah, 10 or 11% going one way and 10 or 11% the other way, I get that. That's not a clinching number, is it, Kristen? That's not a number that's going to make a huge difference, is it?
I mean, in a close race, it could. But
let's say, and I have no reason to doubt, let's say that's absolutely true. 11% automatically, Bernie Sanders is out, they go Trump's way. You'd think at least 11% would go Hillary Clinton's way, wouldn't you?
Oh, of course.
At least the rest.
Yeah. I mean, I think all the other Democratic voters. And she's coming out of her shell a little bit more.
Steve Bertrand pointed that out, and I've been very guilty of when Hillary talks and she gets excited or she's defending herself, she comes across scolding. It's mm-hmm. just this voice, which I know I sound like too to my kids and husband. I realize that. But Steve pointed out that last night it was a softer side of Hillary. Jack, thank you for calling, by the way.
It's just the style.
And,
thanks.
You know, she just let the microphone work, which I think she needs to do.
Right. And she also, I mean, when she first got into the race officially, even conservative columnists were talking about the value and the worth of being the first. And we just got a glimpse of that last night. But I think that's going to pull a lot of those Bernie Sanders supporters over, too. The more she emphasizes this historic moment, being a woman. And Donald Trump, I think he keeps going after her for, he's not going after her for the right reasons. He should be tagging her for being an insider in Washington. And she's also a multi-millionaire. Those are two areas where I think he could dig away at her support. Instead, he keeps sticking to the email scandal. How would Trump succeed
at that, though?
If he's a multi-billionaire, how can he say, hey, here's the trouble with you, Hillary Clinton, is you're a millionaire and you have a lot of money. it's watered down by the fact that he has even more money,
right?
Isn't it?
But he's open about it, and she's more hypocritical about
it.
Yeah,
you'd
never
know that about
her. She's part of the middle class, and she represents your values. And she was already criticized, which I don't agree with this, but last night she was wearing an Armani jacket that was $13,000.
Yeah.
So, you know, it just takes away something like a chip that she might be able to play against Donald Trump. She's also a multi-millionaire, and she's that way because we are a free market capitalist country.
Hasn't every president in our lifetime been a multimillionaire?
I'm sure Jimmy Carter was not.
I don't think
he was a farmer and a governor.
And Bill Clinton wasn't, right, when he was elected?
Correct.
Wasn't he? No.
But once they
He
leave,
was a millionaire with right. the ladies, though.
He was.
We got to take... Oh, wow, that was weird. 312-981-7200. Craig and David, hang on. We will continue talking with Kristen McQuarrie. It's Bill Leff, Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN.
Bill Leff, it's Wendy Snyder, and Kristen McQuarrie is our guest. Fine columnist for the Chicago Tribune. We're talking about not just last night and what happened politically, but what's going to happen in the future. If you want to check in, 312-981-7200 is your best move.
And David's been on hold. Hey, David, what did you want to say?
Hi, how you doing?
Great, thanks.
Good. I'm wondering Kristen's thoughts on the fact that Bernie might be hanging around because he may believe that Hillary is going to get indicted with her email scandal.
I mean, a lot of people are suggesting that. I think he could probably suspend his campaign and then still get back in it if that were to happen. But it's June. And she admitted in an interview recently, she still has not been interviewed. Now, I know some people think that means that the case is in fact legit and moving forward. But I don't think he can continue to run his campaign and kind of damage his own credibility as a candidate waiting for something that, you know, might not happen and probably won't.
Okay.
Thank you, David.
Appreciate it. Yep.
There are people that totally think it's happening, and they say, you know, what are you gonna do when she gets indicted? I don't know. I mean, is there a great chance of that?
When you look at past cases, General Petraeus did, you know, get charged with a crime because he was emailing his lover on a different server, and you know, breach of national security is a big, big deal. I think the problem with her is that there's no smoking gun that we know of. There's no malicious intent. She is correct when she says other officials also used private email. And she has modified her statement enough now where she says, you know, she never sent or received items that were marked classified. So until, and we've seen a release of, a, you know, 55,000, 65,000 of her emails at this point.
People suggest she edited out the ones that they were looking for.
Well, I mean, I have a lot of faith in the FBI director who came to the job. He's very nonpartisan. If there's something there, he will bring it forward. But I don't get the sense that she's nervous about it at all. I mean, she's talking about it openly. She's answering questions about it. She hasn't even been interviewed yet. And you still have the FBI director essentially still answers to the attorney general. And the attorney general is an Obama appointee who might be more sympathetic to her and could probably, you know, downplay or quash any sort of indictment war to come. Some people disagree with that, but we'll see.
I was on Politico's website yesterday, and a name came up as a possible vice presidential candidate for Hillary Clinton that I find very, very intriguing. I had never thought of this name before, but it's interesting to me. Al Franken.
Oh,
what?
Gosh.
God, I hope not.
If you go to Politico.com, they make a very interesting argument for Al Franken being the vice presidential candidate.
What has happened to this country that we called home?
It's not. I can think of. I mean, there are. That's not the
deep
worst
thoughts.
No, that's Jack Handy.
I love Jack Handy.
Why isn't he a vice presidential candidate?
He should be.
So is that an impossible play to have Al Franken as the vice presidential candidate?
I don't. You start with such a credibility gap. I mean, I know he is now taken seriously, but there is still a large swath of the country that still thinks of him as, you know, a comedian. And
except when you think, go back to Ronald Reagan when. I mean, I know he was a politician for a long time, but there were plenty of people when he announced that he was running for the president. They go, wait a minute, that's an actor from B Westerns. That's not a president. And
right.
Arnold Schwarzenegger, who was such a joke too. I just read something yesterday or the day before where they were talking about leading Republicans who don't like Donald Trump, and Schwarzenegger's name was third or fourth on the list. considered a leading Republican when a couple of years ago they're like, wait, the Terminator can't be the governor of California.
Yeah.
So even though you go, wait a minute, Al Franken is just a comedy writer, a comedian.
That's some, worse than a Western precedent. And a tough guy.
There's Maybe. Just no time to polish him up before November. Yeah. You know, there's and he had a talk show, so I can't even imagine what kinds of things he was saying that they could use against him. I think he's just too dangerous, and he doesn't come from the right part of the country anyway.
If
you believe in all of the geographic, you know, she needs somebody from Ohio,
yeah,
Colorado, California, one of these larger states.
Is Elizabeth Warren the one you expect will get the nod on this?
No.
You don't think
not
so?
At I don't all. Either.
No,
you don't either?
No.
She's not going to pick another woman.
I don't think she would pick. I don't. I actually don't think she would pick another woman. And I think she's going to look for someone who is racially diverse. There's a lot of talk of the former Austin mayor, who's now the head of HUD, whose name is escaping me, but he's Hispanic and has known for kind of transforming his city. You really just want someone as your sidekick. You don't want anyone who could possibly overshadow you, and that's what Elizabeth Warren would be to
Interesting.
Hillary.
Interesting. All right.
Julian Castro?
Right. Yes. Julian Castro is probably on the short list, and I think he would be a good
So pick. The same country that made fun of Obama for 8 years for having an interesting middle name, Hussein, would be okay with somebody named Castro being the vice president.
Oh, I'm sure he'll go through the ringer.
Yeah.
He will be put through the ringer.
More
for
material
sure.
for Trump.
Yep, exactly.
All right, we promised Craig to get him on. We have such a quick amount of time here, Craig, so get to your thought here.
Right, just think that Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump are, I think Hillary, if she's going to do anything or be effective, she's got to get away from that establishment. I think everybody's just tired of the same old, same old, and I think that's what they're going to get with Hillary. I mean, I'm not a Bernie Sanders fan. I'm not particularly a Donald Trump fan, but they're different. They're bringing something different to the table. I mean, it's not like they're going to get in there and just change everything. They can't do that. I mean, there's a Congress that will hold them, you know, responsible. And if there's issues, then they'll get them out of there. And they did it with Nixon. So I just don't, you know, I'm not a Hillary Clinton fan just because of the FBI stuff and all that. But she's just part of the establishment. It's just more of the same old, same old. I think people are just tired of it. I think that's why Bernie did well. I think that's why Trump has done well.
And that's why you believe Bernie shouldn't concede at this point or suspend his campaign.
Obviously, by the numbers, he can't. But yeah, if there's some legal issues that come up, yeah, then definitely he should have the opportunity to get back into it because he is the only other one running. But you know, I think Hillary, if she needs to between now and November, I think she really needs to get off that establishment stuff. Because even the way she talks, it's all establishment talk. Well, we're going to do this, and we're going to bring this together. Nobody does that. I mean, yes, Trump is harsh, and he's not my number one favorite. But at least he speaks, you know, to the normal, everyday person. Maybe it's not the easiest. Maybe it's not the nicest. Maybe there's some, you know, racial tension in there. But it's not the same old vanilla political jargon that every other politician uses. We're going to look at this, and we're going to think about America, and what's best for America, and blah, blah, blah. And this is what we've got. We need to change the outlook and change how Congress looks at things.
Great thoughts there. Thank you, Craig. We got to run.
Isn't it funny how people who like Trump like him because he speaks his mind, and the people who don't like him because he speaks his mind?
Yeah. True.
Can't win, Bill.
I got to leave with a quick Jack Handy thought.
Sure.
This is probably not going to sound funny, but
what?
one of Jack Handy's deep thoughts. If you're walking down the street and you see a dummy falling from the top of a building, catch it because, hey, free dummy.
All right, I'm voting for him.
Sure words have never been spoken.
I hope he's it.
Kristen, thank you very much for being here. It's Kristen McQuarrie. Read her in the Tribune. We'll take a quick break and then news, Bill and Wendy, WGN. Steve, thanks. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. If you think you know everything there is to possibly know about O.J. Simpson and his trial, guess again. A new 5-part documentary, O.J. Made in America, debuts this upcoming Saturday on ABC. And then the rest of the documentary will be airing on ESPN. We've got Ezra Edelman on the line right now. Ezra is the man responsible. He's the producer, the director, and the writer of O.J. Made in America. Ezra, how are you?
I'm good. How are you, Bill?
Excellent. This was quite an undertaking, wasn't it?
Sure was. A lot of work.
Yeah.
How exciting it was, because what a complicated man Mr. Orenthal James Simpson was, or is still.
Yeah, to say the least, and a lot more complicated, I think, that people seem to think he might be. I think he's been reduced to something much more simple and caricatured as something that's, you know, a lot of people just say, oh, isn't he that guy who killed his wife? Yeah. He played football. and there's a lot more to the story.
Such an unlikely story for so many reasons. And Ezra, as you, I'm sure you remember at the time, it was called The Trial of the Century. That holds up, right? Can you think of a more spectacular trial in every dimension than the O.J. Simpson trial?
I mean, no. To put it simply, I cannot. And, you know, but maybe just because those who would even have no inclination to follow a trial followed that.
Right.
And they certainly knew what was happening on a daily basis. And there are these moments from the trial that people, you know, 20 years later still know about, whether it's, oh, if, you know, the glove, it not fitting. And if it doesn't fit, you must acquit. Or they know about Mark Furman. They certainly know about Marsha Clark and Johnny Cochran. You know, this sort of gripped America for a year and a half.
I remember when this went down. I was such a fan of O.J. Simpson's. Number 32 at USC, then with the Buffalo Bills. I did a book report on him in elementary school or junior high. I loved him. And when the news first broke, I mean, like everyone else, no way could he have done this. Well, boy, that certainly changed.
Well, what changed for you? When did you think that maybe he could have done it?
Just with the evidence. And did you watch The People versus O.J. Simpson, by the way?
I did not.
I loved it. Cuba Gooding Jr., in my opinion, did not do a very good job portraying O.J. But as the trial went on, and that was the first time we watched a trial on TV, collectively, all of us, it's like just the evidence presented, you still wanted to go, no way could this guy have done this. But then the evidence really pointed to it.
And that's where this becomes, you know, obviously this is a huge story about race and race in America and the city of Los Angeles, you know, and a story about the police. Having said that, you know, the way you were just talking about OJ and the way you felt about him and then coming to grips with the fact that, wait, is this possible? You know, that's what celebrity does. I mean, we were all seduced by this guy.
Yep.
How great he was as an athlete, how affable and charming he was as a pitchman and as a movie star. And it's not that he was famous, it was just that he emitted such goodness at the same time. There was I wouldn't call him pure, but you know, he made everyone feel good, and that was his talent. So the notion of him of all people to stand trial for murder, it just didn't jive with what existed in our brain. It's like, no, that's not possible. And that's why the story, I think, is so rich and still, I think, is so relevant today, because it says so much about us and our relationship to celebrity and fame. And the fact is, you know, he created this incredible image. And some of that, by the way, was true to who he really was. But some of it was also carefully, meticulously crafted over years to be as engaging as he could be to everyone, not just one segment of the population.
Ezra, I remember thinking this at the time, and I'm not the only person who's ever said this by far, but at some point, do you think that OJ himself felt that he was innocent from these crimes?
You know, I find it really hard to, you know, engage in a conversation about what goes on in OJ's head.
Yeah.
You know, it's you know, clearly when you look at footage of him, you know, the same way, first of all, I'm also reluctant to weigh in on what I believe to be the truth about those crimes.
Whether or not it was him or not.
Because I just think it distracts from sort of what we're trying to do with the film.
Sure.
But having said that, I do think when you look at him, especially in the, I don't know if you've seen the film or not, but when you look at him in the last part of the film and you see him so, you know, vehemently deny any involvement in the murders.
Yeah.
And do it repeatedly, you know, and, you know, it's hard. You go, what is going on in your head? Are you just sort of continuing an act that's been going on for decades, or I mean, for years or decades? Are you sort of, have you convinced yourself that you had nothing to do with this? You know, it's really, but that's also what makes this so riveting, because it's unexplainable.
Yeah.
And so that's, I think, one thing, and frankly, There is some things that are done very purposely in the film that I hope a viewer will be challenged to look at him the same way after watching this.
Go ahead. Sorry.
No, that's it. That's it. I'm done for now.
No, that's okay. We're going to take a break. But now the people at Tribeca were treated to this this past weekend.
Oh, no, no. It played at Tribeca in April.
Oh, in April. Okay. But we're going to get to...
It was released in the theaters for a week in Los Angeles and New York a couple weeks ago. So there have been people who have had a chance to see it.
All right. Because you asked if we saw it yet. No, and I cannot wait to. I really can't. It debuts this Saturday on ABC, OJ Made in America. We're talking to Ezra Edelman, producer, director, writer, and we will continue talking to him after this. Bill Leff, Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN. We are talking with Ezra Edelman, and if you're an OJ fan, which a lot of people were, don't know if they still are, but it is an intriguing thing. OJ Made in America debuts this Saturday, June 11th on ABC, and then the rest of the series will be on ESPN. You can check your local listing. Ezra, my question to you on this project that you worked on, were you able to speak one-on-one with OJ Simpson?
I was not.
Did you try?
I wrote him a letter in jail, and I got no response. He's not done any interview since he's been in jail in Nevada for the last... He's been in jail for now almost 8.5 years, and since then we've not heard a peep from him.
There was a story the other day, Ezra, and you're connected to it in a way. Ron Shipp, a friend of O.J. Simpson's, at the premiere of your documentary, O.J. Made in America, said that he expects O.J. at some point to admit to these killings. Do you see it that way? Do you think that's going to happen?
I mean, I have no idea. I mean, Ron had a relationship with OJ over the course of, you know, a couple decades, and I've never met the man. So Ron, in that way, has more insight. I don't, you know, if you ask me separate of that statement, I would say that I don't believe OJ will ever confess to the murders.
Yeah. Yeah.
So in that way, I don't agree with him. But not, and it shouldn't have, I don't mean to negate his opinion. It's opinion, and it's formed, you know, based on a world that he knows better than I do.
What about OJ's first wife? I don't recall her name. She doesn't seem...
Marguerite.
Where is she? Did you talk to her? What has
she
happened
probably,
to her?
More so than anyone else, I would have loved to have talked to Marguerite. And she has you know, been, you know, dropped off the map in many ways. No one really has heard from her in the past 20 years. And there was one interview she did during the trial, but she didn't testify despite the prosecutors wanting her to testify, and from what I understand, she lives in Northern California, but we did not have any direct contact with her. But she obviously, you know, she knew OJ from the time he was a teenager and was along with him during that rise, and so, you know, I would have loved to have heard her thoughts.
During the documentary, there's clips of 72 different people that you interviewed, people who knew OJ throughout his life. What did they have in common, other than the fact that they knew OJ Simpson? What was the commonality between them?
I interviewed 72 people, 66 of whom are in the film, and they aren't all necessarily people who knew OJ. The story is you know, touches on a lot more things than just OJ.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's really a deep dive and also to the city of Los Angeles, the history of the LAPD, the relationship between the black community and the LAPD. And so there are a lot of people who are former LAPD officers or clergy or civil rights activists who weren't people who were directly involved in OJ. And so the film is much more comprehensive than just a biography of OJ.
And Robert Kardashian, of course, a great friend to OJ Simpson, which he was portrayed in the People versus OJ Simpson, that he was kind of convinced OJ did it and was heartbroken, but he was still the juice, he must have said 50 times in there. Although thanks to this whole trial, that's where we now see the Kardashians, all the girls and the new girls and Kris Jenner. Are there any Kardashian mentions in this documentary?
Well, there's footage of Robert Kardashian from his deposition. And but yeah, I wasn't that interested in the Kardashians.
I am so proud of you and so happy for your answer.
You're our hero.
You really are, Ezra Edelman.
Yeah. As you can tell, I don't even like the question.
Right. I know, I could tell, and I'm sorry, but it had to be asked because without that trial...
Well, wait, hold on a second. Why did it have to be asked?
Because without that trial, I don't...
Who cares? Why even dignify a mention? There's no need to mention him.
Because Robert Kardashian was their father, and I thought it was worth a mention.
Okay.
You answered. I mean, I'm thankful you did.
Do you think, Ezra, do you think anything happens differently if Rodney King's story doesn't happen just prior to O.J. Simpson's story? Do things play out differently?
Well, I think what we try to do in the film is tell you that it, you know, I think so many people think that this was this direct, you know, sort of result from the three previous years. And yes, there was this sort of cauldron of tension that exists in LA, but this wasn't something that, you know, was 3 years old. This is something that was 50 years old. And so what we sort of take pains to do in the film is to really explore that history. And just as there were riots in 92, there were the Watts exploded in riots in 65, you know, around the same issue, you know, an incident of police brutality. And there are these incidents that happen over the years in which the frustration, again, you know, bubbled up until it finally exploded in 1992. And by the way, that wasn't just a sort of, you know, an outcry. Yes, it happened the day that those four police officers were acquitted.
Yeah.
But it happened that less than 2 weeks after Rodney King was beaten, there was a young woman named Latasha Harlins who was 13 years old who went into a convenience store in South Central to buy a carton of orange juice. And she was gunned down in cold blood by a Korean shop owner who, when she went to trial, received not one day of jail time. And so there's more than just that one story of Rodney King getting beaten, and that somehow directly resulted in the acquittal of O.J. Simpson. There's a much deeper, darker history that affected not only the jurors in the case, but black Americans, I mean, black Angelenos and Americans. So I just think that that's sort of something that that gets short shrift when we talk about the story. Mm-hmm.
I can't tell you how excited I am to see this. O.J. Made in America. It sounds like it's multifaceted, not just all about O.J., but L.A. and other things. Is there something that you found while putting this all together, producing, directing, writing? Is there something that you found out about O.J. Simpson that you never knew before?
Oh, sure. I mean, I never knew his father was gay. That was interesting.
I did not know that.
So, you know, that informs sort of the question of masculinity and sort of, you know, anything you learn about someone, you know, someone especially, you know, as I said before, I can't get inside the guy's head. But any of these details that, you know, when you're talking about a guy who came from where he came from and scaled the heights that he did, every little detail that's learned along the way, it's, you know, it's informative. And so there are a lot of little things like that, too many to count, that I learned along the way. And by the way, Wendy, I didn't mean to attack you. I just didn't want to dignify them more than they need to be dignified.
You know what? We don't like to even mention them, but in my experience as an interviewer, I thought that was a valid question, and I didn't mean to insult your project.
No, I know you weren't. I just want to be friends.
All right.
Ezra, that's nice of you.
We can have popcorn together while you're rewatching it and I'm watching it, because I'm telling you the truth. I cannot wait to see this.
It looks great. It really does. What are you working on next, Ezra?
I'm working on finishing this for now and getting some mental space. It's been a long 2 years. A great 2 years, but a long 2 years.
Sure.
So I haven't figured out what I'm doing next yet.
O.J. Made in America debuts this Saturday, June 11th on ABC, and then the rest can be seen on ESPN, all five parts.
And Ezra, since we're such good friends now, the next project you're working on, will you let us know and we'll talk about that too?
Absolutely, as long as you don't ask me about the Kardashians.
I promise.
That seems fair.
Thank you.
Ezra, thank you. Good luck with this.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Ezra Edelman, director, writer, and producer of O.J. Made in America, with little to no content about the Kardashians involved.
That's a valid question.
I think it is a valid question. But I just read an interview with him where he, and I know you didn't read this.
I did read it.
Oh, you did? Because
the listeners didn't?
No, I know. But he said in the that's the question he doesn't want to ask.
I saw that right in front of my face, and I set it up because I wanted the listeners to know what I had just read on this press release.
I get it. Don't worry. It's all right. All right, we'll take a quick break.
My new best friend.
Steve, are you going to do any Kardashian news?
Only if you don't even ask.
I'm not even going to ask. Stick around. More show.
That goes for you too, Wendy.
It's a valid question.
I know.
I stand by my... Sometimes I'll admit when I screw up.
What was your question?
Nothing.
Don't ask.
Don't ask.
All right.
Wendy, from time to time, you and I, we like to help people. We're in the business of helping people. If there's something we can do that helps people out there, why would we say no to that? Am I correct?
Because I like to rile people up. That's what
sometimes I do. Sometimes I've noticed that you do. Kevin just told me Ezra called back and said he's out of the business. He doesn't want to do this sort of thing anymore.
Shut up. He apologized.
He said he's
for
done.
For being short with me.
Doesn't want to be a documentarian anymore. There's a man named Juice Meyer. Juice spelled, of course, the way he always has spelled his name, J-O-O-S, Juice Meyer. He is over at a website that I've never even heard of before, Kiora. I don't know what that is. But they are also
in the
business.
Oh, the Q-U-O-R-A?
Yeah.
Quora.
Is
that
what
that is?
Why
do you have to do the Q all the time? There was a baseball coach called Farquhars, and you like Farquhars.
Yeah, I just like to swear. Well, Juice Meyer, if that's how he pronounces his name, he's got some things that he says are uncomfortable, but if you do these things, it could change your life forever.
Talk to me. I need to change my life.
See if these are things you have done or you will do to change your life forever. Number one, question everything. Do you do that? Do you question everything?
Yeah. You know what? I have a natural curious nature.
That's how I describe you sometimes.
But I'm not like a little kid who, you know, when you ask, they ask a question, why is the sun shining?
Right.
But why?
Right.
Why?
Kids are also
inquisitive
They're very inquisitive,
beasts. But
to the point of nausea. It says the most uncomfortable thing that someone can do is to question everything that is taken for granted and seek answers. Try to see the other side of the norm. And I think that's what most people have a version of, don't they? You see something, you don't just want to accept it. You want to go, well, how come? Right?
I know a lot of people who just accept it and move along.
Yeah. Yeah, not you. Not you. Here's one. Be honest.
I am honest to a fault.
Yes.
You know that.
Yes. Being the most honest that you've ever been with someone in your life will be one of the most uncomfortable things that you can do, but it can also be very valuable. To do this, Juicemeyer suggests, writing a list of all the people to whom you have something, either good or bad, to say, writing down the honest feelings that you need to convey to them in a letter. Have you ever done that? You thought,
who has time for that?
I don't know. I'm not sure. All the people? That'd be hundreds of
I'd
people.
I'd have to write you a letter.
You should write me a letter. You should.
Why, you low on mail?
Have it notarized, please, so I know that it's legit. And then write the letter to the person that you have something good or bad to say something to, and then hand it to the person.
No. What if you don't see them? You know, if there were people that I could write a letter to thank them for instance, being a mentor in the radio biz or something.
Right.
It's not like I hang out with them, so I'd have to mail it.
Oh, that makes sense. Now, can I tell you my version of this?
Mm-hmm.
Somebody said once, I read this once, that if you're upset with somebody about something, write a letter to that person, a nasty letter explaining why you're mad at that person, but then don't send it. Right?
I've done that with emails.
All right. What I've done is, now this is a couple of years ago, there was somebody that I was very upset with, and I did just that. I sat down and I said, that's what I'm going to try. And I wrote that. And then when I was done with it, I read it and I went, this is great. So I sent it to them.
That's not how it's supposed
to be. You're not supposed to send it.
But at least you proofread it. Because when you're mad and you have a spelling mistake, that's bad.
True.
If you're slamming somebody and writing them a letter about how disappointed you are in them, don't have a typo.
Right. Make sure that the margins are lined up and the spelling is good. And then sign someone else's name to it because they'll get mad at you. Mediate is probably good too, but meditate is what he says. You got to meditate. I never do that. Do you meditate?
No, but I have to go back to my acupuncturist. I've been busy doing other things, but that's when I was able to meditate. And I'll tell you, I walked out of there like I was a new person.
While they were putting needles in your skin.
And cups on my back.
And cups on
your
back.
And rings on my fingers.
And bells.
On my toes.
Uncomfortable. Why were you meditating then?
Because you're laying there for 40 minutes. And there's like a soft music going and
you get lulled into it, don't you?
I did. I just was like, you know, really trying to just focus on inner energy and my chi.
Right. Right. Your cheese? Did you say your cheese?
Chi.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, I bring cheese in my purse.
I knew you went to Wisconsin, but you didn't want to talk about what was going on. I knew there was something. If you're just joining us, these are uncomfortable things that you could do that if you do them, it could change your life forever.
And I bet you wouldn't meditate because you would feel foolish.
Yeah, that's probably part of it.
I mean, really, if you could just sit and focus on something and just calm, I like to call it chill the F down. If you could do that, you would feel really better. But
do you think so?
Yeah.
I don't think it's for me. My wife tried to talk me into doing a yoga class once. I can't.
You would like it.
I can't. Wake up extremely early, they suggest.
Who
That's a good idea.
Suggests that?
I don't know. It says, wake up at 5 a.m. while everyone else sleeps. It's a perfect, challenging way to begin the day in silence. So wake up at 5 a.m.
Nope. Not going to listen to them there. Mm-mm. And we both did morning radio at some point in our careers.
Yeah.
And when you have to get up at 3 in the morning, you never really want to wake up early again.
You never catch up.
Mm-mm.
It's impossible. Here's another suggestion. Well, this one is fairly obvious. do something creative. Have you ever done anything creative?
Never.
No, me neither. Waste of time. Many people say that they want to be creative. Then they go home and they binge watch TV episodes on Netflix while drinking red wine. While fear of rejection and failure are powerful demotivators, having a creative outlet can do wonders for our bodies and our minds. Well, yeah.
Why, well, you we're wanted... creative every day. Then I like to make jewelry. I like to garden. I like to paint.
Right. Those all count.
Yeah.
Everybody has to have some sort of an outlet, you know.
Candy Crush.
Or Candy Crush, right? Watch your pennies.
What are they going to do?
Keep track, it says here, Wendy, of every penny that you spend.
Forget that.
That's a little much. From auto repairs and life insurance to coffee and French fries, and do this for several months.
Nope.
Try paying for everything you can with cash.
Do that now.
If you have to reach in your wallet and pull out cash, you will often think twice about how much you need something.
That is true. If you just charge things, you just charge things, and that's how you become credit challenged. I can't say
don't
it.
Don't even.
Credit challenged.
Credit challenged.
But if you use a debit or pay cash for everything you use, you do think about it.
Right.
But I'm not going to count my every penny.
Well, that seems extreme, doesn't it?
Can I round it off?
It doesn't say you can. No. No
like
rounding
it.
Off, it says here. All right. We have more of these. These are things that if you try, and they admit, they say these are going to be uncomfortable, but if you do these things, it will change your life forever. This is according to Juice Meyer. And are you going to question Juice Meyer? I don't think so.
If you have some ideas, too, we're here. 312-981-7200.
It's us, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
My name is David Hochberg.
Hi.
Hello, Wendy. Wendy, you know Juice Meyer, right?
No, I don't.
Juice Meyer is a man who wants
want
to help you. He said, Juice Meyer is, this is what he says to himself all the time. What can I do to help Wendy and people like Wendy? Well, he's come up with a bunch of uncomfortable things. He's the first to admit these are uncomfortable things, but if you do them, it could change your life forever. Some of them are pretty self-evident, I think. This one is obvious, and who amongst us couldn't do this more? Volunteer to do things.
I need to do that more.
Yeah.
I really do.
Volunteering for a nonprofit or doing selfless deeds is the best thing you can do. Volunteering can make you feel like you're part of something big. Use your volunteer experience to the best you can. Here's what one volunteer says. It was such an overwhelming feeling when I volunteered being a part of a community. Yeah. Everyone should do that more often. It does. It feels very good.
It does.
Yeah. Now, these two kind of go hand in hand. The first one is track what you eat, which I've never really... Did you ever have a journal?
To. Yeah. Weight Watchers. There's a Lose It app. Maybe I should track better.
Does it... When you're doing that, do you go, wow, I really eat more than I thought?
Absolutely.
Is that what happens? Yeah.
If you keep track... I mean, portion is the whole issue. And if you keep track of everything you eat,
yeah,
at some point you go, wow, no wonder I've put on 10 pounds.
Right. Yeah.
So it really keeps you focused on what you're doing.
I could see
and it
that.
Makes you accountable. Like you can't just say, oh, I just had a piece of pizza
right.
yesterday and
right.
then it was a whole pizza. There's a difference.
So when you have a piece of pizza, do you just put that on your chart, I had pizza, or do you say I had tomato sauce and I had mushrooms and I had olives and
you look up what the calories are for like, I don't know, 12-inch pizza, one
yeah.
slice, and what kind of toppings are on
oh.
it, and then you try and figure out how many calories that is.
Now, the next one, like I said, is almost identical. It's a little bit different, but it ties in. Eat only nutritious food.
I cannot do that.
That's hard, isn't it?
Only? I mean...
Only.
I know we try, but I mean, only... It's very difficult to do.
You know how twice a year I go on this thing where I don't eat any sugar, and I don't eat or drink anything bad for me for about a month and a half or 2 months? And I feel so good during that. Now, the downside is I don't get to eat any of my favorite foods, and especially like here, because we'll have on a guest that's just made cookies or a cake or something, or I'll go somewhere with my family or friends. We'll go out to dinner, and everybody's ordering a dessert,
yeah.
and I can't. But the good side is I feel so good when I'm off of sugar and off of everything
then
bad.
Then why don't you do that more frequently?
Because I would feel like I'd miss out on so many delicious things.
Welcome to suffering.
I don't know what it is. I mean, like now, after I play tennis, I'll come back and I'll have like a grapefruit beer or something, and I love that. But you know, to go without all that stuff. A month and a half or 2 months is a long time.
It is a long time.
Wish I
don't know how
forever.
You do it.
I wish I could do it forever.
What about if you just reduce all the time? Like maybe save it for weekends or special occasions.
Yeah, I could try that, I guess. I don't know.
But see, honestly, Bill, that is kind of what it's easier if you don't can't have it at all.
Right.
Sometimes.
It is. Even French fries, like I love French fries. Last night for dinner, I had a chicken sandwich and a ton of French fries, and I loved it. And I never would have, like during those periods, that would have been, oh no, I can't do that.
No fries.
Right.
But
right,
still right. The chicken sandwich?
A healthier version, like a grilled. I had a fried chicken sandwich yesterday. I would have gone grilled and maybe a wheat bun. So, yeah, there's little things you can do.
Did you get that about a wheat bag?
Yes.
Can I say something? That I have one that tops all of juices.
What, you're going to top Juice Meyer? Good luck.
I'm going to try.
What is it?
I think everybody should one time in their life sing karaoke at a karaoke bar.
Because why?
Because it just makes you giggle, laugh, have fun, and don't take yourself so seriously.
Yeah? All right. That's an interesting one. That's an interesting one.
I think
one.
It's fun because there are people that can't sing, and sometimes people choose songs that they don't sound very good doing.
Right.
But it's still right. fun to do, and if you're out with friends or something, I think everybody should try that once.
It's similar to something on Juice Meyer's list. Did you steal that from Juice Meyer's list? It's similar. He says, practice public speaking. This is, you and I have talked about this before. It's the number one fear in America is speaking in front of a crowd.
See, and I know that, and I've heard that more so than spiders.
More than snakes, more than spiders, more than anything. Ghosts. You name it, more people are afraid of speaking in public than anything else.
And I have to be more, I don't know what the word is.
But gooder?
I have to be more patient with people that maybe, because sometimes with my younger son's a little shy and I'll be like, go say hi to somebody. Yeah, I will, but just not right this second. It's like, how can you not say, I mean, there are some people that are uncomfortable.
A lot of people.
I have to remember that sometimes.
It's hard. Some people just can't do it. What about this one? I like this one. I never thought of this. These, if you're just joining us, these are things that it is suggested that if you do them, and they're uncomfortable for a lot of people, they could change your life forever. This one makes total sense to me. Talk to someone new. You know, you fall in the rut of only talking to people that you know. Now, of all the people I know, you are most open to if somebody's just somewhere, you'll go over and say something to them.
Strangers. I like strangers.
Right.
Because they don't judge me, Bill. They don't know me. To know me is to judge me.
That's it, isn't it?
You'll find someone new because I'm off the rest of the week.
Yes, but whoever is in filling in for you, I will not talk to.
It's going to be an interesting show.
I'm a very loyal co-host, and whoever's sitting there has quite a job in front of them because I'm not going to talk to them at all.
Well, I can't.
I refuse to talk to them.
I won't be here. You have to talk to them.
I like this. You know I love this one. Leave your phone in your pocket. I know everybody now has this thing where you have to be 24 hours a day.
It's always
you have to
here.
Be ready.
Do you go out to? I mean, it's become a burden. I'll admit, going out to dinner, I take my phone out and I put it right in front of me. Mm-hmm. It's on silent, but I have a strobe light that when it
just
goes off,
case.
I can see what's happening.
Right.
And I wish I didn't have to do that.
I love the. You saw me a week or so ago when I forgot my phone that day.
You didn't realize it till noon.
It took me. Half the day before I went, oh, you know what I don't have today is my phone. At home, I hardly ever have it on me. When we go out to dinner, I leave it in the car or don't bring it at all. It's just better for me, you know?
It's
I know there's people who can't live without it, but pick just one thing. These are, again, our suggestions that will make your life better. Pick just one thing to master at a time. I know everybody decides, I'll make a New Year's resolution. I'm going to be a better person. I'm going to do 1,000 things all at once. Impossible. Pick one at a time.
One thing to...
To master at a time.
We should choose radio.
It's not for me. You can try
it. We should
it.
Try and master it, is what I'm saying.
I don't think you can. And then the last one really quickly. Accomplish an almost impossible goal. Set a goal for yourself that you know is going to be impossible or near impossible, and then do your best to accomplish it. That's hard. That's probably the hardest one on here.
Yeah, but if you think it's impossible, why even try?
Oh, yeah. That's inspiring.
Seriously,
that's
though.
That's
I mean that. I'm not trying to be funny.
Right.
If you think it's impossible, you're not going to work hard towards
right.
towards it. So set a goal that's attainable, but something you've never done that you wanted to do before.
Right.
Like run a marathon. I have no desire.
But don't you know, I know a couple of people who go, you know, I wasn't much of a runner, but I thought to myself, why not? And I did it. Aren't you more than proud of them? And you go, wow.
Oh, it's great for them.
Started out as a dream and you pulled it off.
But that's what I mean. I have no desire to do it, so I would never achieve it. But then it's kind of pointless. So
Yeah. These are all things that you, while they're uncomfortable things, if you try them, they could change your life. We'll take a quick break, and then Ro and Ann are in. Stick around, Bill and Wendy, WGN.